Bas.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. Current Broncos and former Ohio State linebacker Jonathan Cooper was arrested again Thursday night on multiple charges that he violated a protection order filed against him earlier in the week. In addition to multiple charges, including a felony charge from his first arrest this month, Cooper is now facing charges for harassment from repeated phone calls and violation of a protection order, according to records. Baseball today, Reds host the Diamondbacks at 7:10, while the Guardians welcome the Tigers at 7:10. Cleveland's calling up its former top pitching prospect Daniel Espino. The 25-year-old has been through two shoulder surgeries, over 1,200 days between starts, and he'll debut 7 years after he was drafted 24th overall in 2019. This update sponsored by Germaine Toyota for unbeatable service and sales. Visit Germaine Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road or online at germainetoyota.net. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
It's time to add some spice to your nooner. Nooner. Funny. This is the place where big-time guests, bold opinions, and little cute doggies come together. This is Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus, the number one rated windows and doors in Columbus.
So where's the office back at Division? The in office, baby. Going up.
Welcome to Rothman and Ice on The Fan. I am Dave Biddle. I am joined by Scotty Vegas. We have Cole Bartemus at the controls. Anthony and Maddie are off today. Gents, how we feeling?
Oh, great, David. I'm a little confused, though, because it feels like this should be Sunday morning, right? You and I do On the Money on Sunday mornings, but it's great to see you both.
It's great to see you as well. I think this is the first time, not including when we do like the Fan Tailgate show where you come on for a segment. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time we have co-hosted a show together that wasn't one of the Sunday shows.
I think that sounds right to me.
It took us 8 years to finally talk Fish into it. He finally is letting us do it. Cole, how you doing, my man?
I am all good, fellas. So we got an on-the-money takeover. Appreciate you guys coming in and doing your thing. Well, I think Rothman's going to a niece's graduation this weekend. Ice has baseball with the 15-year-old, so they're all over the place, but we'll have fun.
Heck yeah, we will. We're going to have a Scotty Doesn't Know segment later this hour, World Cup themed. And let's start with the World Cup. United States begins World Cup play tonight against Paraguay, 9 o'clock. Scotty and I are going to be at the casino, Hollywood Casino, for a watch party tonight at 9. You can win free prizes. So, guys, let's get into this. Like, what would make this a successful tournament in your mind for the United States men's national team? Do they just need to get out of the group stage? Do they need to win at least one in the knockout round? Which is not what it used to be. It used to be if you got out of your group stage, you're already in the round of 16. One win away from the quarterfinals. Now, you're in the round of 32 if you get out of your group stage. There's two wins away from the quarterfinals. So what would constitute a successful World Cup in your opinion?
So I feel like there's a couple ways we have to look at this, Dave. First off, to avoid disaster, you have to get out of the group, right? So that's number one, is get out of the group, get to the round of 32, and then kind of see how things play after that. If you look at the betting odds, which of course is the first thing that I start looking at when the draw was announced and all that good stuff. So stage of elimination, USA to be eliminated in group play is plus 460. So that's very unlikely. However, that would be the disaster scenario. The most likely betting scenario is USA making it all the way to the round of 32 and losing, because they're plus 160 to lose in that round. But to me, I think for us to say it is a successful World Cup for the United States, it's make it to the round of 16. That's the number that I have circled. Like, okay, get to the 32 would be okay. You know, you avoided the disaster of losing in group play. However, for it to be successful, you got to get to the 16.
I agree 100%. You know, you outlined that perfectly. Like, not getting out of the group stage, disaster. Getting out of the group stage, okay, we won't look at it as a disaster. But then winning a game, that makes it a success. Then winning two games makes it a wild success. I'm not even going to entertain them getting to the semifinals. That would be awesome. But just get to the quarterfinals. That would make it a wild success. But yeah, just get to the round of 16. That would make it a success for me. What about you, Cole?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of chalky because you guys have already said it. But basically, the standard's the same, where it's like, get to the round of 16. That's pretty successful. 32, like, that's okay. I don't think it would be the end of the world. I mean, it certainly wouldn't be exciting. It wouldn't be a gigantic disaster, like not even making out a group play. But you know, with the last round in 2022, making it to the round of 16, and then having the, obviously not even qualifying in the World Cup before that, that would definitely be tough. But I think that round of 16 would make you feel pretty good about it, and then build off of that.
Yeah, and their group is interesting. Like, they don't have any bad teams in their group, but they don't have any, like, stellar teams either. Like, they're the betting. And I think if this was maybe, if Paraguay was hosting the tournament, maybe the United States would not be favored to win their group. But they are the favorite. But all these teams, if you look at, like, the FIFA rankings, are all bunched together. When you look at Paraguay, Turkey, United States, and Australia. Australia has, they're the quote-unquote the worst of the group, but they're still, they're all kind of bunched together. So it's a very interesting group, but the top two make it. And if you're third in your group, you still have a decent chance of getting out.
Well, what's incredible to me, you know, because, you know, for me, I'm a very fringe soccer guy, right? So it's like, all right, there was a little bit of excitement because the U.S. being, you know, one of the host countries, it was like, okay, all right, I'm excited. And then we're throwing these watch parties. And so there's a little bump with that, not that kind of thing. But if you look at the number of viewers around the world and how humongous this World Cup is, like I was comparing this, I was just bringing up TV ratings. And in 2022, the World Cup final ended up having 1.42 billion viewers global wide, right? So, and then I wanted to look and kind of compare that to like our biggest event here in the United States, which is, of course, the Super Bowl. And that's 127.7 million viewers. That was peak, the peak for this last Super Bowl. The peak for the Super Bowl is 138 million viewers. So, like, we talk about it, and, like, we're somewhat excited for the World Cup. You and I both have USA on, but the excitement around the world, it just, it doesn't feel like there's that same buzz here, in my opinion.
And I thought there would be because we're hosting it, along with Canada and Mexico, but, you know, the majority of the 16 sites are in the United States. There's two in Canada, three in Mexico, 11 in the United States. I thought there'd be more excitement, but it just goes back to, as we all know, what's the most popular sport in our country by a wide margin? NFL. When I say wide margin, if you split up NFL and college football, let's say those are, even though they're both football, let's take those as two separate entities for a second. Number one, NFL. Number two, college football. And then there's a pretty big drop off to number three, basketball. And then there's a decent drop off to number four, baseball. And then there's a debate. I think soccer would win in our country. What's the fifth most popular sport? Is it hockey? Is it soccer? Is it golf? Is it tennis?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm talking about fifth at best for soccer, which is, to your point, probably why we're not very excited about it.
And that's at best, right? And truly, like the MLS being, you know, something that was kind of an afterthought. I just remember, you know, that the United States struggling as much as they have in these World Cups has also kind of contributed that, obviously, a little bit. So for me, I'm going to be locked in. You're going to be locked in. We're going to be throwing all kinds of fun contests at the people at the casino later today, and we're going to have a blast with it. But, you know, we're going to be doing first goal scored tonight, Paraguay. I've got the lines on tonight's game. So USA to win plus 105, to tie plus 220, and Paraguay plus 290 to win.
Oh, Paraguay. Pretty big underdog there. Yeah, I mean, this is a good team. I'm not going to say the United States men's national. No, I will say this if they don't make it out of their group stage. They're not a bad team. Like, they're a solid team, but this is supposed to be the golden generation. Like, I'm wearing this Christian Pulisic jersey right now. Like, he's a good player. He's not this elite player we thought he'd be. When he was coming up, there was all this talk he could be like a top 30 player in the world. You know, he's probably top 100, but not top 50. And he's the best player. And they've got some other good players. I like that a lot of these guys, a lot of the, you know, top players for the United States do play in Europe. A good amount of them play in MLS too, which has improved over the years. But I like that guys like Pulisic and Weston McKennie and those guys play in Europe. But this is supposed to be the golden generation. And it feels like, like the Landon Donovan tournament, as I call it, in 2010, you know, where they got out and he had that great goal to have the U.S. advance. That was in South Africa. You were thinking, okay, this golden generation's coming. They're a solid team right now in 2010. They got out of their group stage, pretty solid team, fun team to watch. And then by 2026, we're going to be a real contender. And it feels like we really haven't improved that much since 2010.
So let me ask you this. So we've got the World Cup obviously going on, but what is your favorite global sporting event? One where the entire world's into it. Like, obviously you can throw the Olympics into it. You can throw World Cup. I think it's fair to throw golf majors. I think it's fair to throw tennis majors because obviously those are involving everyone in the world. So what would you, if you were to power rank for you, just you, Dave Biddle, your favorite international event, what would it be?
Number one would be Olympic men's basketball. Absolutely love it. And it started in like the year you were born, I believe, showing my age, 1984, the last team of all college players to win the gold medal for the United States with Michael Jordan and all the guys, Chuck Barkley. And then they lost in 88. That was the last time college players even played for the United States, just college players. And then they've won gold every time, except for once since when Manu Ginobili and Argentina got them. Number two for me, Scotty, would be Wimbledon. Wimbledon. I'd love to say U.S. Open. I think those are the two best, but Wimbledon to me has always been the best.
Yeah, you know me. I'm all in on Wimbledon. I'm all in on the British Open.
You're going to say Masters, aren't you?
As far as a global event, yeah. Number one for me, yes,
yep.
It would be that. I mean, again, it's an event that you look forward to every single year. It's got the best of the best. It's at the best course, I think, in the world. So, yeah, for me, best international event, Masters.
We got to get Cole in here on this.
Well, I'm going tennis 1 through 4. I'm just trying to order the four in my head. And I'm going based on time zones and part of the calendar. So Wimbledon's going to go number one. The thing that draws back the U.S. Open for me is it's right up against college football. So that's why the U.S. Open's a little bit tough for me. So I'm going to knock that down probably beneath the French Open. So if I go, and based on time zones, Australia's got to be last. So I guess I'd go Wimbledon, French Open, U.S. Open, Australian Open.
Okay. At first, I thought he was joking.
No, I'm serious.
No, he's a big tennis awesome guy.
I mean, he looks like a tennis player.
I think
he looks like a pro tennis player.
Maybe the four people that care about tennis in this building are you, me, Cole, and Anthony.
And then, absolutely. And the man who usually sits in this seat, Mr. Anthony Ross.
So when's our podcast starting?
Yes.
I'm sure that will do well. A tennis podcast with the four of us.
Tennis podcast in Columbus, Ohio.
If we can get Agassi and Roddick on there, maybe we'd be okay. And Sampras and Courier and all these guys. But just four of us, I don't know how if that would take off. All right. I'll tell you what's taking off is New York Knicks. All right. Up next, game 5 of the NBA Finals is tomorrow night in San Antonio. Do the Knicks have this on lockdown or can the Spurs recover? This is Rothman and Ice.
P.S.
The Fan is a secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly cloudy skies will turn into sunshine throughout the day today with gradual clearing, highs getting in the mid to low 80s, and then for tonight, clear skies with lows down into the 60s. We will kick off your weekend on Saturday with plenty of sunshine in the forecast and highs getting in the mid to upper 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
All the Ohio State conversation you can handle. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Your Ohio State flagship station. The Fan. A perfect afternoon parlay. This is Rothman and Ice.
Welcome back to Rothman and Ice. I am Dave Biddle, joined by Scotty Vegas, Cole Bartemus at the controls. Anthony and Maddie have a well-deserved day off. All right, gents. Knicks with an incredible comeback the other night to win Game 4. They take a 3-1 series lead. Game 5 is tomorrow night in San Antonio. Knicks have it on lockdown, Scott, or can the Spurs recover and win the last three games?
I'll tell you what, Dave. I have been guilty. I have been guilty a couple times in the last couple weeks of turning games off way too early. That includes NHL. That includes NBA. And yeah, to me, I think San Antonio still has a shot to get back in this thing. However, let's look back at that game and just game 4. So at halftime, Spurs down 27 points. Dave, at halftime, the Spurs were minus 15,000 on the money line to win that game, which means they had an implied win probability of 99.3% at halftime of game 4. Found a way to blow it, and Knicks at halftime were 22-1. And if you look at the betting odds, they'll kind of show that the odds makers kind of feel like San Antonio is the better team. Evidence the fact that San Antonio was a pretty significant favorite heading into the finals. And even though that San Antonio right now is down 3-1, the series line is Knicks minus 440 and the Spurs plus 345, which isn't outrageous for a team that's down 3-1, which of course we know that we've only seen one team come back down 3-1. Of course, the Cleveland Cavs. Yeah, it's a long shot, but these games have been so wild and such roller coasters that it wouldn't shock me, Dave, if the Spurs take game five and make this whole thing very, very interesting for game six.
In case anybody is wondering how Sportsbook makes so much money. I mean, look at these. Look at these money lines. Give it to me again. Minus 430 for the Knicks.
Yep.
And then what is it? +185?
So for the Spurs to win it all right now, it's plus 345.
Oh, 345. Okay, that's better than what I thought. I thought you said like 145. I'm like, how is one 430 and the other is 145? Okay, that makes a little more sense. So yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, the Spurs have a chance, but especially the way they got their hearts ripped out. They're calling it like the, you know, most important shot in New York basketball history. And I think they're talking, they're including, you know, college and everything and the street ball game and everything. But, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say it's 100%, but I give the Spurs maybe a 5% chance. I'm not buying plus 345. There's no way that's good enough value.
Just five. So for me, I'm closer to like 15 to 20%.
Really?
Like, and again, it just keeps coming back for me of like how roller coaster these games have been, Dave. Like, there's been times where I'm watching and I'm like, gosh, the Spurs look so much better, you know, and then the Knicks go on that crazy run. So for me, I'm probably in the 15 to 20% chance that they can pull the comeback. But yeah, I mean, after it's really about how you can bounce back from the heartbreak, right?
And it was a historic collapse. It wasn't like one of these, like, man, they pretty much had it and you know, they lost the lead. This was a historic collapse. Speaking of historic collapses, Phil Mickelson. Smooth transition.
Yeah, seriously. Okay.
I mean, right?
So it's funny you mentioned this, Dave, because this is a guy who I'm telling you 10 years ago, it felt like the entire public loved Phil Mickelson, right? Because it felt like he was the everyday guy that was having a ton of success and winning a lot. Now, I say that because he had a lot of heartbreak, right? So he's out on the golf course and we see him absolutely blow some U.S. Opens, blow some big tournaments. We see him go through kind of the yips in putting for a while. So it kind of felt like Phil was one of us. And you watched him and his demeanor on the golf course was he always had that big smile and giving everybody that half thumbs up. And it's like, oh, Phil Mickelson, he's one of us. He's one of the likable guys. And then the whole Liv thing happens.
Well, there was gambling before that.
Well,
that probably didn't turn you off too much.
That did not turn me off.
He's addicted to sports gambling, Scott. He's like, I like him even more.
In fact, that brought back to one of us, right? So Phil Mickelson, to me, you know, he had the, and again, a lot of these big time athletes go through a lot of these gambling stories. So Phil was one of those that, you know, there were a lot of rumors out there about the gambling debts and the issues that he had with sports betting as well. But He had that public persona of the everyday guy that's seeing and feeling the success on the PGA Tour. And it felt like he was almost universally loved on the PGA Tour. And then you get to the point where he wins the PGA Championship a few years ago at an older age, right? And it's like, oh yeah, even at this older age, Phil's still around. Phil can still compete at this high level. And at that point, he's at peak, right? Everybody's like, oh, the old man, the lovable guy. He's at the top of the world. And then he makes this decision about the Liv split. And that obviously angered a lot of people. Well, now the latest story on Phil Mickelson is he has been banned from his club for kind of allegedly creeping on some female employees at the club. And it's a terrible story. And it's a continuation of the decline of Phil Mickelson from the top of the world all the way down to the bottom.
And I get these are allegations. We have not heard his side of the story yet, but you're a world famous golfer. For that club to kick him out tells me they must have some evidence.
Well,
I mean, everything's on camera. I can't imagine it's a he said, she said. They don't have any evidence, because for them to kick Phil Mickelson out of there, again, this is just my opinion. I don't know for sure what happened here, but that for them to kick him out, wow, they must know something.
Yeah, and you talk about like at the top of the world too. Like I still remember watching that PGA Championship where Phil wins, and he beats Brooks Koepka at the end too. Like he beats an American who is really popular, and he gets it done.
All those
and
people
like,
are following them, and they're right in the middle.
They're
of
walking
them.
Up the fairway. It was almost like out of a movie. It was almost like the finale of Caddyshack, right, where the fans are just walking up the fairway, and it was just a storybook thing. And then all all of a sudden you just see the complete turnaround of Phil. And I don't think there's any way at this point for Phil, because a lot of times Americans love comeback stories. At this point, you know, I think he may have been able to come back a little bit from Liv and the split with Liv. Maybe not. But I don't think there's any coming back after this story.
I know it's not, you know, it's pretty much apples to oranges, but there are some similarities. Where are you at with Tiger? Tiger was able to come back, and there are people that hate Tiger, I'm sure. But overall, it seemed like golf, you know, the golf world embraced Tiger and was rooting for Tiger when he came back. Phil's, you know, older than Tiger. He's not even going to come back now. But, like, you feel different about Phil than you do Tiger's reputation.
Because now it feels like Phil let us down and was really fake for all those years. I think that's kind of the take for me, because I grew up loving Phil. Like, Phil to me was my favorite golfer. I know so many people love Tiger Woods, and I like Tiger Woods too. But for me, I was like, I loved when Phil was able to top Tiger in the very, very rare times that he did. But for me, like, it was like, yeah, it was cool when Phil, but now I look back and I'm like, gosh, how fake was that guy? You know, and, you know, there was all these stories about how leading up to a U.S. Open, he was going to leave the U.S. Open, and he had his own private jet ready to fly to his wife and for the birth of his child and all that stuff. And it was like every narrative pointed towards Phil just being the everyday good guy. And now it just feels like the complete opposite, Dave.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, Tiger, you could make the argument like his off course stuff that he's a bit fake or was fake. On the course, though, you knew what you're getting from Tiger.
Yeah.
No pun intended. He was a Tiger out there. Whereas you're right, Phil was kind of like always being fake now that we look back on it.
Well, and you wonder exactly, because to get kicked out of a club, for a Phil Mickelson to get kicked out of a club, they took his pictures down. Like, they literally, like, he was playing and he's out of here. So it had to be really bad.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, again, I don't believe he's spoken on it yet, or his lawyers, so I'm sure we'll hear his side of the story if he does have a side of the story. But what a fall from grace for Phil Mickelson. Back to the Knicks. How about OG Anunoby? Not just the game-winning shot, the game-winning blocked shot, had 33 points. This man is averaging over 20 in the playoffs. You know, I mean, he's got a chance. I think Brunson would win it if the Knicks win. Brunson's going to be MVP, but Anunoby's like right there.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember watching him in college and not thinking like, okay, you thought, okay, this guy could be a decent NBA player, but nothing like this. And that tip, and I still keep coming back and rewatching highlights of that, and just exactly how he had the body control to tip that ball in the way he did. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous.
And couldn't have timed it any better. He caught it. I mean, he was way over the rim, and he couldn't have gotten, I don't think. It was a perfectly timed. And
yeah.
He's a little lucky that Wemby wasn't one of the ones like stretching up to get that. I was like, did he just like outjump Wemby there? Like, no, Wemby didn't really even know what was going on because he was a little bit away from the rim. But who have you been rooting for? Because I grew up, I still am a Bulls fan, even though I don't know why. But I'm a Bulls fan, so I didn't like the Knicks. I have found myself like jumping out of my chair, pumping my fist, rooting for the Knicks this series. It's weird. And it's not like I have any hate for the Spurs either. It's been weird for an old Bulls fan like me. You used to hate John Starks and those guys because they acted like they were on Jordan's level. Then he'd smack him down eventually. Sometimes it was pretty close, though, before he smacked him down. I've been rooting for the Knicks like crazy. I don't know what's gotten into me.
So, you know me. I'm rooting for who I'm betting on. So it changes game by game.
Fair.
But it just so happened like that game four was one where I just actually, I've been taking the home team on the money line. So I was excited that the Knicks won, but I had completely given up, Dave. Like when we saw that at halftime, that was one where I was like, nah, I'm done with this game. This bet's dead. So, I keep going back and forth who to root for though.
All right, we're going to take a quick 2-minute timeout. Up next is a World Cup themed version of Scotty Doesn't Know. This is Rothman and Ice.
Details.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The best bet on the radio. This is Rothman and Ice.
Welcome back to the show. Dave Biddle and Scotty Vegas filling in for Anthony and Maddie. We still have the main producer, Cole Bartemus, at the controls. And my favorite segment on our On the Money show is Scotty Doesn't Know. And I thought Anthony and Maddie wouldn't mind if we brought this over to their show. Go ahead.
It's funny that you say it's your favorite segment, because this segment is the one segment in radio that makes me nervous. Like, I am nervous for what the heck you're going to do to me here.
It's a World Cup themed version of Scotty Doesn't Know. Hit it, Cole. As promised, the World Cup edition of Scotty Doesn't Know, the first of its kind. Now, Scotty has soccer maybe, you're not a soccer hater by any means, but you, it's maybe seventh on your list.
Maybe 10th.
So he's going in. We're going to grade him on a curve here. All right. The first year of the World Cup was when? What year?
Okay. I think I did see this, and I think it was 1930.
Bam.
Let's go.
Got it. Ding. All right. It's not nearly as fun.
Let me find a ding for you. Yeah, I got to have one somewhere in here.
It's not nearly as fun when he gets it right, Cole.
Hmm. Come on, one for one, baby. Come on.
Yeah, it was in 1930.
Yep.
All right. Do you know which country won?
Oh, gosh.
It was the host country.
This isn't a ding, but I'll give you this.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
Cash money.
I'm going to go with England.
No.
Uh-oh. See, this is what happens when I have audio on different pages.
Germany. Give me Germany.
No. Scotty doesn't know.
Oh, wait, am I playing it every single time for the same question, or is it one?
Oh, yeah. Every time he says...
Oh, my goodness. We're going to hear this a million times, aren't we?
That's what the people like.
All right.
We'll be at the casino. They're like, can you guys
do more
Scotty doesn't know?
Not England, not Germany.
It's in South America, and it's
capital... three strikes
Montevideo. Does that help you?
Uruguay.
Yes.
Bam.
They beat Argentina 4-2. All right. What is the farthest the United States men's national team has ever advanced in a World Cup? To what round?
I want to say between quarters and semis. Give me the quarters.
No.
Semis.
Yes. What do they always say on standardized tests? ACT, SAT. Go with your first instinct.
Right, semifinals.
Right. Yeah, semifinals.
What year was that? Don't tell me that's your next one. Stupid.
maybe think back to the first question.
Oh, gosh. Oh, so the very first one? So 1930.
Got it. All right. Now, the second farthest the United States has ever gotten is the quarterfinals.
Okay. That was recently, right? Relatively.
Oh, he's going to get this one, too. I was going to say, have they reached the quarterfinals yet this century?
This century. I'm going to go with yes.
Nailed it.
Ooh.
All right, here you go. Which year?
Was it... Oh, no. 08?
No. There wasn't it. I think they
missed in 08,
didn't they? There was no World Cup in 08.
Okay, how about...
There was one in 2 years before then.
06.
And 2 years after that, and 6 years before 08.
Give me 06.
No.
They didn't even get a
group stage in 06. All right, your clue is...
Was it in the 90s?
No, it's this century.
Oh, this century.
So your clue, I think you were going to say this initially, ACT, SAT. Your clue is Holy Buckeye.
Oh, 02.
02.
Dang.
There you go. All right, here you go. You've heard of... Oh, here, let me go back to this. Yeah, you've heard of both of these guys. Two guys are tied as the leading scorer ever for the United States men's national team. This is not just in World Cup games, but just in all...
Oh, boy.
You know... U.S. games. Two guys, and they're relatively, you know, recent. They're retired now.
Give me Landon Donovan.
Landon Donovan's one of them. Can you get the other one? He was a teammate of Landon Donovan's. He also, they do broadcasting together. Cool guy.
I'm going to go Brian McBride.
Harry is your, not Brian McBride. Clint
Dempsey.
There you go. All right. So those are the top two ever. Who's the active leader for the United States men's national
team?
You got
the jersey on right there, Christian.
Christian Pulisic.
Yes.
He's got 33. He is fifth overall all time. All right. Who is the head coach of the United States men's national team?
Oh, gosh. Cole, I need help. I need help. I have no idea.
If you give me his nickname, I will accept it. You don't have to get first and last name. Just
Cole. Chief. I don't know.
Skipper.
Skip.
I have no idea.
Okay, no, so I'll give you his manager. Let's see if you can get it. Just even his last name. All right, nickname is Poach.
I got nothing.
Pochettino. All right, Pochettino. What country is he from?
Pochettino is from Argentina.
Yes.
Oh, whoa! That was a complete pull out of the tuckus.
I had no idea. His parents were from Italy, and then he...
I would have guessed Italy just off the name.
Yeah, wow. That's an Italian. Nice job.
Atta boy.
Nice job. All right. You've heard of this guy. Which player has both the records for the youngest player to ever score a goal at the World Cup and the youngest to record a hat trick at the World Cup? And he was 17 years old, both feats.
American?
No.
No. All right.
No, South American.
That doesn't help me.
Growing up, because there was a video game, I considered him the most famous soccer player ever, which he still might be.
Pele.
Okay. There you go. Nailed it. Good job. What country is Pele from?
Brazil.
Nailed it. Nice job.
By the way, I got screwed in this thing. But
nice job.
There was a random draw here at the office where we were all given a different country to root for in the World Cup. And it's how far your country goes is how much money you make. And I ended up with some of the dumbest countries, like the small countries that I didn't even know were in the World Cup. And so I got screwed. But the one country that I do have that I'm pulling for is Brazil.
And this year is a little tougher because when you have 48 teams, that's a little tougher, right? They expanded it to 48.
Yes.
From?
32.
Yes! Yes! When was the last year the United States hosted the World Cup? What year?
I feel like it was 90s, right? Was it like 92?
No, you're very close, though.
94.
Correct.
This is more so an issue of him not knowing which years the World Cup was held.
That's very true. And the by fours struggling with me. What the math is really off.
Yeah, and your clue was good. You got it on the second one. Your clue, if you didn't get it, was going to be OJ. Like for one of the nights, that captured everything. seriously, 94. There was the Knicks were also playing the Rockets,
the
NBA Finals, and everybody was watching the OJ Simpson chase, myself included. All right. I said this earlier in the show. See if you were paying attention. You might know this anyway. All right. The USA has 11 sites. How many sites does Mexico have this year? How many cities in Mexico are hosting World
Cup?
Three. You nailed it. Can you give me two of the three cities? One should be easy.
Mexico City.
Mexico City. That's one of the three. Give me one of the other two.
Oh, gosh.
There's a good chicken dish that has this name in it.
Chicken papakash. No, chicken fajitas. Chicken. I got nothing.
Monterey.
Scotty.
Scotty doesn't know. The other one is Guadalajara, which is fun to say. All right. How many sites in Canada are hosting?
Can't be more than the three. So maybe let's go one.
No.
Vancouver, I think, is one of them. Give me two. Let's go two.
Two. And you got one. The other one, I think, has got to be obvious. What's if Vancouver's one, what's the other one?
Is it Montreal?
No.
Toronto.
Toronto.
Mm. Not getting away with it.
All right. Of the 11 sites that are being hosted in the United States, give me seven of the 11. And metro areas count.
Seven? You want seven? All right.
What do you think is fair?
Three.
Three? These are not, it's not like there's like one of them is in Beaver Creek or something. Like these are like big cities.
I know LA. I know Seattle. Boston.
See, this is, I should have kept it at seven.
And then we're getting a little dicey. New York.
Yes. New York, New Jersey. Yep. Technically New Jersey, but it's New York, New Jersey. Yep.
Where in the Midwest? I don't think Chicago is.
Correct.
Is Kansas City?
Yes.
Okay.
You're doing great.
Five.
There's got to be one down south.
You already mentioned tonight's game. You already mentioned that one.
Yeah, I'm going to go Dallas.
Nailed it.
And then Phoenix. Is there a Phoenix? No.
We give it to him. I think he did pretty well there. It's Atlanta, Boston, Dallas, Houston, Kansas City, LA, Miami, New York, New Jersey, Philly, San Francisco / Bay Area, and
Philly.
Seattle.
Hey, where Seattle. Is where we got a deal?
Where will the World Cup final be? What city? What metro area?
New York, right?
Correct. Good job.
That's always a safe guess.
Yeah.
Good job. All right, just two more here. These are tough. You're not going to get these, but we'll just throw them out there anyway. Who's the leading goal scorer all time just in World Cup games? He's from Germany. You're not going to get this. I wouldn't have got this either. And he didn't even play that long ago.
Preemptive doubt.
Yeah.
There you go. Miroslav Klose of Germany with 16 in 24 games. He played from 2002 to 2014. Who is second all-time in World Cup goals? He's from Brazil.
Pele.
No. That's what I would have guessed, too.
Ronaldo.
Yes.
All right.
That's good that you got Ronaldo on the set. Good job. Yes, Ronaldo played from 1994, these World Cup games, 1994 to 2006. He only played 19 World Cup games and had 15 goals. pretty impressive you got that. I was actually, my one and only time to Europe was 20 years ago. It was when the World Cup was going on in Germany that year. Now, we didn't go to Germany. We went to Italy and France, and then eventually went up to Amsterdam, went to Brussels, then Amsterdam. And then playing in the finals that year was Italy versus France, which was pretty cool. Those are the two countries we really went to. And we're in Paris. You can even look this up. So the Brazil was the favorite with Ronaldo to, I believe, to repeat as World Cup champs in 06. We're in Paris for the quarterfinals. Told the story a lot. And the French upset Brazil in the quarterfinals. Dude, you would have thought it was like a Super Bowl parade on steroids. And again, this was not to win the World Cup. This was this
around a 16.
I already knew. Wow. This was an eye opener for my wife, but I already knew like the World Cup was huge. But even for me, I was like, I can't believe this is a reaction for. I mean, everybody, like every Frenchman and woman in the you know in the town was just flooding the streets, setting off fireworks. It was awesome, and it was for the quarterfinals of France upsetting Brazil.
You know what else is awesome, Dave? I'm looking at the show sheet for the rest of the show, and we are not talking any more soccer. That was it.
Cole, Cole, I think he might need a Scotty doesn't know on that, because I believe maybe when we do a deeper dive.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Deeper Cole. Dive into soccer?
Cole can be the tiebreaker on this. He's the producer, you know, the regular producer. We're just filling in here. Yeah, if we want to do a deeper dive on soccer trivia, I think we should do that.
We can do that, or we can do Scotty's mixed bag of topics.
Oh, that sounds better. Oh, that sounds Scotty's good. Mixed bag sounds better.
That sounds good, because we did the show sheet, and then Scotty had some, because I said, like, let's throw some ideas out there, and you threw some, like, really good ideas out this morning. One of them was Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, like, one of them was that we wouldn't
be talking
about
the World
Cup. So
Dave's already poaching from your mystery bag of topics.
Yes. Jeez, I thought I had a good show sheet, and Scotty just made it even better. It's good teamwork right there. Good teamwork. Up next is Overs and Unders. This is Rothman tonight.
0-0.
Bishop and Friends.
Your comedic timing on the zinger to Saban.
I thought we could smile a little bit, laugh a little bit. If the timing was right and coach is there, we could maybe get a smile on.
Bishop and Friends, sponsored by Diamond Seller.
Weekdays from 9 to noon on The Fan.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Rothman and Ice presents Overs and Unders.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
Hello. All right, Cole, take it away, my friend.
All right, let's start here. How many times will Dave throw at the break saying you're listening to On the Money on the Fan over under 1.5?
I've made it through almost the entire first hour without doing it, but we're still early in the show, boys. I'm taking the over. I can't believe I haven't done it yet. I'm taking the over.
Right? So I've definitely mixed up when we've done the call-in show followed by On the Money on Sunday morning. I've mixed that tease up all the time. I've been very impressed, because the first time you said Rothman and Ice on the very first tease, I'm like, it took me a second. I did a double take. So I'm going to go under. I think you're a pro.
Ooh, wow, how about that?
Now, can I do the like the prediction markets? Can I like bet that I'm going to do like the under and then intentionally go over? Yes. Like some people do?
Oh, yeah. That would be nice.
Exactly.
We wouldn't manipulate lines here.
Oh, never.
The Bengals win total sits at 9.5. Over, under 9.5 wins for the Bengals this year.
I like it. I know I'm a Bengals fan. You guys are going to say I'm a homer. But, like, you know, they're going to be favored in a lot more than, you know, 10 games. If you look at the, I think if you look at some of the go ahead lines, they're favored in all 17. I'm not buying that for a second, or 15 of the 17, or something ridiculous like that. I'm certainly not buying that. Man, if they're not at least 10-7, that's a huge problem. And I think they're going to, if I had to predict, I think they're going to be 11-6. So give me the over.
I'm buying the over. In fact, we did a little pre draft special. And at the casino, we were talking about teams and betting lines for the Super Bowl. And I got to be honest with how wide open the AFC is and the moves that the Bengals have made defensively this offseason. I'm on the over, Cole.
There you go. How many game sevens will we have between the NHL and the NBA? Over, under, 0.5?
Over, because I think Stanley Cup's going to 7. Vegas is hosting game 6.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm hoping for over. I'd love to see 2. I'll go with that we'll get 1. So over.
Which one do you think is more likely?
Definitely NHL.
There you go. How many Grand Slams will Yannick Sinner win in his career? He currently sits at 4.
Oh.
I'm going to put the total at 11.5.
Sinner is at four.
I'll go over. He's already a third of the way there. I think, does Sampras have 14?
I believe.
Something. I thought that was one of those records I thought would never get broken. And then Federer blows by it, then Nadal blows by it, then Djokovic blows by both them. Alcaraz is going to win a bunch. I'll take over 11.5.
I know it feels like, and I know Zverev just won the French, but it feels like everyone is going to be Alcaraz or Sinner, Alcaraz or Sinner, and you might throw in one random like we had with Zverev. I'm going to go over.
I think this is probably going to be Zverev's only one of his career. It was definitely a now or never with that tournament.
Yes, oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Wait,
Alcaraz didn't even play. Sinner went out round two. Djokovic went out round three.
Yeah.
It's like, if you can't win that one, then you're never pulling it out, dude.
Yeah.
The best player he faced was, I know he was seeded 10th, Caboli, but he was like ranked 14th coming in. That was the best player he played. And he made it interesting. It was five sets in the final.
For sure. All right, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this one. The win total for Indiana football this year is 10.5 wins. So they're losing a lot, but they also, I'm sure, are bringing in a lot. Josh Hoover of TCU is their new quarterback. And they're probably reloading at every other position that we just don't know it yet. So we'll find that out as the season goes on. But Indiana over under 10.5 wins. How's it sit?
I have them pegged at 10-2, so it's really close. But I'll go under 10.5.
Gosh, it's such a trash schedule. I just pulled it up again and see. North Texas, then Howard, then Western Kentucky, then Northwestern, Rutgers. I mean, it's just right,
never mind over. No, I'm kidding.
It's such a bad schedule. However, they're going to lose to Ohio State. And they're going to lose to either Michigan or USC. So I'm with you on 10-2. Give me the under.
Were you guys surprised when the Indiana-Ohio State line came out that it was, depending on where you look, it was anywhere from a pick 'em to -1.5 in Indiana's favor?
I was surprised. It's funny you mentioned that, Cole, because we were guessing the line. Scotty knew then. We did an off-the-top segment where he was like just throwing lines that Isaiah and I did not know yet, and that was one of them. He was like, Ohio State, Indiana. I think I predicted Ohio State by 1.5 or maybe 2, and you're like, no, pick them.
Yeah.
That did surprise me for sure, and Indiana being favored by 1.5, that would definitely surprise me. Then again, though, it's the coolest sports story. I mean, if you take the scarlet and gray glasses off, it's the coolest sports story. Most unbelievable sports story of my lifetime, what Cignetti's been able to do at Indiana.
And Cole, I'm with you. I was a little surprised at that line, too. I know that there's limits on how much you can place on look-ahead lines, but gosh, I feel like hammering Ohio State on that one. With Ohio State wanting the payback, I love that. I love Ohio State only being pick 'em or even a slight dog in that.
How many years will Bryce Underwood be in college, over under 3.5?
I'll say over. Because, I mean, if he, frankly, unless he improves exponentially, now they're saying the true freshman Carr might, you know, push him for playing time this year, which is amazing considering what he's getting paid. Unless he improves immensely, guys, he's not going to be a guy that would leave after 3 years and be a high draft pick, in my opinion. He's making a ton of money at Michigan. I think it was only a 3-year contract, so I don't know if they'd re-up for that fourth year. Assuming he could get that a nice NIL deal. I'll say over 3.5 years. I don't see him being a 3-and-done guy.
You know I hate agreeing with you, right?
Why?
Usually we have somewhere we disagree. I'm with you on the over on this, Dave, and a big reason, obviously the amount of money that he's going to make playing college football. So I'm going over 3.5 years.
All right, and let's do this one to round it out. One more. This is, I want you guys to play judge, jury, and executioner over this wager that was made between Rothman and Adam King.
Ooh. Loser has to buy the other a round of golf.
Okay.
I think Ohio State is a top 25 team for at least...
Preseason?
No. Okay. For at least 10 weeks out of the year.
All right, just to be different, I will take the opposite of that.
We are talking basketball, just to be clear.
So they have to consistently be in the top 25, probably about, what, half the year.
Is it over under, like, 9.5? Is that what we're doing?
I think they said 10, right?
Yeah. Okay, so 9.5, right?
Yeah.
I'm definitely going under and hoping I'm wrong. I don't see them being that much improved from last year.
You know, I did have high expectations with the transfer portal and bringing these guys back. However, the consistency I don't think will be there, so I will take the under on number of weeks. The Buckeyes are in the top 25.
Thanks for playing.
All right. That was good stuff right there. That was good stuff. Up next, we're going to delve into the Brendan Sorsby situation and what might be next. This is Rothman and Ice on The Fan.
The radio couldn't contain us, so we've taken over YouTube. Catch Morning Juice weekday mornings at 6 by searching 971 The Fan. Do it.
Hey, what's up? It's T. Live better.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. After off days Thursday, the Reds and Guardians return to action tonight. Cleveland hosts Detroit at 7:10, with Jack Flaherty starting for the Tigers against Tanner Bibee for the Guardians, who are a half game out of first in the AL Central behind Chicago. Cincinnati greets Arizona at 7:15. Eduardo Rodriguez goes for the D-backs against Nick Lodolo for the Reds, who sit last in the NL Central. In Omaha, men's college World Series starts today with Troy and West Virginia at 2, then Ole Miss and North Carolina at 7. Soccer, the U.S. men's national team opens World Cup play against Paraguay tonight at 9 from L.A. Defender Max Arfston to represent the Columbus Crew. Golf, Ben James and Sam Burns share the lead at 9-under in round 2 of the RBC Canadian Open. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from high interest rates with special rates on balance transfers at BMI Federal Credit Union, bmifcu.org/consolidate.
What's up, knuckleheads? You're listening to Rothman and Ice on The Fan. It's not terrible.
Welcome back to Rothman and Ice on The Fan. I am Dave Biddle, joined by Scotty Vegas, Cole Bartemus at the controls. Anthony and Scotty. Does that count? Anthony and Maddie are off today. Scotty is not off today.
That's at least, one.
At least yeah, I didn't, I'll count
at least,
that.
At least
yeah.
I didn't say on the money. Well, good thing I took on my prediction markets that I would go over the 1.5 of saying on the money or saying that Scotty's off and Maddie's here. But no, Anthony and Maddie are off today. So Scotty and I are with you with the usual great producer, Cole Bartemus. All right, guys, let's get into the Brendan Sorsby situation. We all know the specifics, but what might happen next? You know, when the injunction came down, the first overreaction, and maybe it wasn't an overreaction, I kind of was hoping this was going to happen, was like, okay, the Big Ten's just not going to schedule Texas Tech in any sport, and then Texas Tech basically threatened, well, we're going to sue you for collusion if you do that. The Big Ten's already backed down of that. Scotty, before we hear from some of the particulars in this case, Cole's got some sound for us. What do you think will happen here? You think it's just going to be as simple as Sorsby's going to sit out the first two games? He's going to play the rest of the year? Or do you think there's another scenario that might pop up?
I feel like Texas Tech is digging in and they have decided, hey, we are going to back him. We are going to go through the process with him. And so I don't think they're backing down. What I have found absolutely ridiculous, Dave, is all of these different athletic directors and trustees and presidents and stuff coming out and just saying, hey, we will have nothing to do with Texas Tech and playing Texas Tech going forward. I mean, even the Georgia athletic director, I found this absolutely crazy. Georgia's athletic director, Josh Brooks, just suggesting nobody in any sport should play Texas Tech while this is going on. Well, guess what? We have had so many different off-the-field issues at Georgia over the last several years, and I know that gambling on sports is the big no-no as far as if you're an athlete and you're betting on your own team, and I get it. That's a big no-no. But if Georgia was to look around at the different off-the-field things that they've had and that they've been going through, maybe they wouldn't be talking about Texas Tech in this own way. And I completely get everybody's frustration over the betting on your own team. I will tell you, I believe that it is widespread. Like, I know that Sorsby, he was the one who's been caught with this. I believe throughout college sports that there are a lot of college sports athletes that are betting not only on sports, not only on NCAA sports, but even on their own team. I do not believe that this is a one person thing.
I think would be naive to believe otherwise.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know how many to believe he's the only one and he got caught. That's what I say about Donaghy. Like, people say, oh, you believe in these conspiracy theories that some refs might be on the take. Do you think that's the conspiracy theory? I think the conspiracy theory would be if you think Tim Donaghy is the only one in NBA history who did it.
Correct.
Like, it's just, yeah. I mean, again, I don't know if it's widespread, but I certainly don't think Sorsby's alone here.
Look, this is a very small example at a completely different level, but I was talking to a college tennis player, and we were just kind of just having a conversation. He knows I'm, you know,
Anthony Rothman?
Yeah, not Anthony, you know, a current college tennis player. And we were just talking about sports betting because he knows that, you know, we do what we do as far as hosting a sports betting show. And he was talking to me about bets that he places. And then all of a sudden he's like, you know what? You know, I can't talk about this anymore, and shut down the conversation real quick because he realized that, like, oh, him like talking about this is not okay.
And what's his name? I'm kidding. I would never say what school.
it was not even Ohio State, okay. But it was an athlete, a current college athlete who bets on sports, and he was talking about it and then had to shut it down and realize, oh, I got to be really careful who I am talking about this with.
We've got some sound from Texas Tech head coach Joey McGuire and from mega booster Cody Campbell. Cole, let's lead off with Joey McGuire and what he has to say about the situation.
Brendan Sorsby is recovering from an addiction. He's recovering. I've sat down with this young man multiple times, and the things that he is going through and what he's been through is serious. As a society, we've been okay with other things that happens and allowing players to play. And this has been the one thing that has united people that we're against. It's crazy because it's not murder. It's not beating somebody. So there's a lot of things that we're working through.
This is a slippery, very slippery slope. You know, I don't say this lightly, but, you know, I mean, we can agree alcoholism is a disease, right? Does this mean, no, I know this doesn't have, like, jurisdiction in, like, you know, across the country, but in theory now you could say, well, you know, I have a disease. I'm an alcoholic, so how can you put me in jail for a DUI? You know, too bad Pete Rose didn't do this, right? Could have just found a friendly judge and be like, nah, you know, he bet on his own team. It's not like he committed murder. I mean, to go there, it's not like he killed anybody. Yeah, but in sports, that's the cardinal sin, is betting on your own team. And the idea when he was at Indiana that he only bet on Indiana to win, that's not exactly accurate. There were twice where he bet on Indiana going under their passing yards. You think he might have some knowledge about Indiana's passing offense being one of the quarterbacks on the team, even if he doesn't play? So I'm not buying that at all, because you could use that for anything. You could use that for almost anything, Scott, and hide behind. And I do think that he's got an illness. I think people that, you know, get multiple DUIs certainly have an illness. But are we really going to go down this route where, well, I have a disease, so you can't hold me responsible for it? I don't like that at all.
I think the problem is, I think every athlete probably knows if you are caught betting on your own sport, you are done with that sport. Right. As far as college sports, if you are caught betting on your own games, your own team, you're out. Right. And so what angers everybody, I think, is now there's a workaround where you go find that friendly judge that will help you out and kind of look at those rules and say, no, we're going to skirt those rules and we're going to make up our own new rules. So I think that's the big problem. And look, I think it's going to continue, right? As long as people don't like decisions that the NCAA is making, they're just going to keep going and finding friendly judges and finding their way back in.
It's not like people are suggesting that he should be jailed for this. So the whole, like, why are you gonna, he's not a murderer. It's like, okay, but we also don't have to bend over backwards to cater to him and compromise the integrity of either the sport on the field or the betting behind the scenes in both cases, because you're mentioning the potential insider trading that he could have, having the knowledge of the game plan and betting the under on that stuff. And so I think that's a pretty weak argument to make. Be like, well, he's not a murderer. It's like, okay, well, we put murderers in jail and we're not putting him in jail. Okay, like, I would have loved to have been a college football player. You didn't hear my high school coach going, well, guys, he only runs the 40-yard dash in 5 seconds. Like, what, he's not a murderer. Put him on the field. Like, no. Like, just because you're dealing with stuff doesn't mean that you are exempt from whatever and just you can go on the field because you want to.
It was hurting your mental health that they said you were slow.
Exactly.
I know. You should have taken it to court. Apparently, you had been playing for, like,
yeah, if I just had a
LSU right now.
If I just had a Dublin Coffin grad as my judge.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much. Cody Campbell shockingly had some things to say about this. He was on the Pat McAfee show earlier this week. Hit it, Cole.
It's because the college football world doesn't think that Texas Tech should be as good as we are. You know, we've been a disruptor, just like Indiana has. And so we're a target. And we have been even before any of this started. Now, the volume has gone way up, and a lot of it's been directed at me and at, you know, at Coach McGuire and at, you know, our university. And but that's not fair. If this had happened at LSU, you know, people would say, ah, it's LSU, you know. You know, they're always going to kind of do what they do, and, you know, they're going to keep playing. But it happened to Texas Tech, and, you know, people don't want to compete with this. Of course, ADs and that in the Big 12 are saying crazy things and, you know, saying they don't want to play us. Well, they don't want to play us because they know he's good, and they don't want us to be as competitive. They want to have a better chance at winning the conference. So they're inherently conflicted in their opinion. You know, again, we're going to do the right thing by this kid, and we're going to follow the law.
Now, on Sunday's show, we have a segment that we do that's called That's Trash. That whole soundbite, Dave, that was trash.
Yeah, he acts like you would have thought, if you didn't know any better, that at the very least they played Indiana in the national championship game, not got smacked around by Oregon 23-0 in a game that could have been a lot worse than that. In the quarterfinals, okay, congrats on winning the Big 12, which is basically a step above the MAC. Congratulations. You would have finished like fifth in the Big 10. Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, you're talking about the head coach of Texas Tech and basically the king of Lubbock. Cody Campbell, who runs that whole university. He's not just a mega donor, like I said. He's also in charge of the board of trustees. He basically hired the school chancellor there. Like, he is the king of Texas Tech. So what else are they going to say? I get that. But acting like, oh, yeah, everybody just is down on Texas Tech. And if this was LSU, no one would have batted an eye. Are you kidding me? You're telling me if the quarterback at LSU was caught betting on LSU games, everybody would be like, eh, it's just LSU. It's Baton Rouge. Nobody cares. It was just such a faulty argument.
Yeah, it's funny because a month ago, we were kind of going around the table trying to guess at what the biggest summer story of the year was going to be. And we kind of thought, we threw a bunch of different ideas out there. And the thought was, well, we'll probably have a betting scandal. That was one that we didn't see it at the time, but it ended up being the biggest story. I do want to go around the table and guess where this whole thing ends up. So if we got the crystal ball and we have to say 6 months from now, how does this whole scenario play out? Do you think it's just going to be he's going to have a 2-game suspension and we're going to keep going? Do you think we'll end up having these schools that don't play Texas Tech? Like, what do you guys believe will ultimately be the case 6 months from now from what we're doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, if he is able to play, then the road environments are going to be interesting. By the way, they play at Cincinnati this year. That would be interesting. Right now, if I'm putting odds on it, I think the most likely scenario is he's going to be able to play because the NCAA, if they haven't already, they will appeal this decision for the injunction. But the appellate court where it would be held at, all four judges on the appellate court are Texas Tech graduates. And I realize this judge that gave him an injunction this recently was a Houston grad. And people are like, see, he's a Houston grad, lives in Fort Worth, no ties to Texas Tech. Right, because everybody who's an Ohio State fan went to Ohio State and graduated from Ohio State. Like, give me a break. that doesn't fly at all. This guy could still be, if he's not a Texas Tech fan, he could still be sympathetic to Texas Tech. They brought him to Lubbock to do this. But the NCAA is going to appeal this. All four appellate judges are Texas Tech grads. I hope I'm wrong. I think he's going to be able to play.
If Trinidad Chambliss is playing college football this year, then so is Brendan Sorsby.
I agree. Ultimately, and just think about that first game back and the circus and the media coverage and the eyeballs that will be on that game. It will be outrageous.
With the amount of overturn, like every single rule that they try to enforce, like, what's to stop college football players from who are, like, suspended or coaches who are suspended? What's to stop them, honestly, from just taking the field and playing anyway at this point?
Yeah, I mean,
Jameis Winston tried to do that once, right?
Yeah.
Where he was suspended and he still came out there with the full uniform and helmet.
Yeah, against Syracuse.
Right, that's right. They had to tell you that. I completely forgot about that.
They all might as well do that.
And we're having fun, but it ticks me off thinking about that 2010 Ohio State team that finished 12-1 and got all of their wins stripped. Basically, Jim Tressel forced to leave. All those guys got suspended.
Vacating wins is a fake punishment.
That Ohio State should just be like, no, we're restoring all this. What are you going to do about the NCAA? You have absolutely no teeth. Well, you better take it to court. I bet you could find a judge in Columbus that would say, nah, we're restoring those 12 wins for Ohio State. Absolutely ridiculous. By the way, they didn't take any wins away from Michigan, but they stripped Iowa for wins. It reminds me of the old Jerry Tarkanian quote, right? The NCAA is so mad at Kentucky, they're going to hammer Cleveland State. All right, up next is Under Pressure. This is Rothman and Ice.
Tita Green with Skip Mossick.
Saturday, we're at Scioto Country Club to talk some U.S. Senior Open with honorary chair, former Buckeye Michael Redd, plus Golf Channel's Ron Syrak.
Tita Green with Skip Mossick, Saturday mornings at 9 on The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly cloudy skies will turn into sunshine throughout the day today with gradual clearing, highs getting in the mid to low 80s, and then for tonight, clear skies with lows down into the 60s. We will kick off your weekend on Saturday with plenty of sunshine in the forecast and highs getting in the mid to upper 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 weather impact forecast.
1, 2, 3! Here at The Fan, it's always football o'clock. Proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. The Fan. Rothman and Ice present Under Pressure.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Buy four windows, get four free sale. Visit windownation.com now.
All right, Cole, give it to us.
All right, who are you guys putting under pressure this weekend? Whoa. Heading into, we got NHL, we got NBA. Lots of angles to go.
And we're including
ping pong it back and forth.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, whoever's playing in the finals of the ping pong tournament here is under pressure. I'm gonna go with tonight. United States men's national team. They don't have to win tonight to advance, but man, it'd be like, I was looking at ESPN this morning, like their simulator. It'd be like around 95, 96, 97% chance that the U.S. men's national team will get out of their group if they win tonight. And, you know, I just think the pressure's on the team in general. This is supposed to be the golden generation. Live up to it.
I mean, there's no question the most pressure of the weekend is tonight in Team USA. Because you're the host country. If you lose, that's devastating. So, yeah, obviously tons of pressure on them. I'm also going to put the pressure on our servers at Hollywood Casino tonight. Because I'm telling you, they are opening up that new hotel. It's going to be an awesome atmosphere. I mean, we are going to be throwing the ultimate watch party for the World Cup game tonight. So those servers, a lot of pressure on them.
But there's the tonight. New, like, self-serve beer wall.
That's so true.
That should take a little pressure off. That should take a little pressure off of the servers. Sorry, I shouldn't mention that during Under Pressure. All right. Next for me, the Cincinnati Reds. They started off the season so well. They were 20-11 in April. First time in their franchise history, they were the first pro baseball team to ever enter May with 20 wins. And I don't think they've won a game since. I'm only slightly exaggerating. They've won a few games since, but they got to get back. They got to get back to playing some solid baseball. They host the D-backs. They had a day off yesterday. Hosting the D-backs for a three-game series. The pressure's on the Cincinnati Reds to get back to 500.
So I'm going
to
give you a really weird one. And it's Pat Narduzzi, Pitt football coach, is under pressure. And I'll tell you why, Dave. Because he had Mr. Beast on campus, and Mr. Beast obviously has a ton of money, and Mr. Beast is kind of put out there that he is interested in getting in the NIL game. And so Pat Narduzzi posting a bunch of stuff on social media with Mr. Beast, and my buddy, who's a huge Pitt football fan, is like, this is the ultimate tease, isn't it? Because Mr. Beast on campus talking about NIL, could you imagine the amount of money that he could put towards Pitt football? And so the pressure is on Pat Narduzzi to close the deal with Mr. Beast and get that NIL money.
Okay, I'll go Ohio State men's basketball. They still haven't signed a GM, have they?
No.
How have they not hired a GM?
It's ridiculous.
I think NIL is kind of important. Michigan went out and signed three lottery picks last year from the portal alone. All three of those guys are lottery picks, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, now Ade Mara, who they list him at 7'3", like he measured in as exactly 7'3" with socks on. He's now expected to go like as high as maybe 7th or 8th. Obviously, Lindenborg's going to be a lottery pick. Johnson's going to be a lottery pick. And then Ohio State's best guy in the portal last year. Best guy was, what was the center's name? I forgot his name. The guy was 7
Christoph
foot,
Tilly.
Christoph Tilly. 7-footer, plays like he's 6'4". That was our best get in the portal last year. And a big reason is, well, money's a reason, but they don't have a GM. What are we doing not having a GM? A Mark Pantone for the basketball program.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. How is there not a GM for OSU Hoops? In fact, with OSU Hoops, I was looking at Andy Katz's power rankings for the offseason, thinking, okay, you know, Ohio State made a few moves. Obviously, Bynum's coming back. Mobley's coming back. Got Thompson coming in. So I'm thinking, oh, OSU's going to be top five, top six of the power rankings for the Big Ten. Nope, kind of sitting there right at ninth, which kind of puts you right probably on the bubble. So, yeah, I'm with you. The pressure for this coming season on Jake Diebler, year three, there's a lot of pressure. I think that just making the tournament silenced a lot of the critics this coming season. Just making the tournament, not enough, Dave.
Now, as far as pressure, this can be unless you have another one, this can be the last one if we want it to be. Do you put more pressure on the Knicks or the Spurs?
I'm putting more pressure on the Knicks at this point.
I mean, too.
What, it's out of, 32 opportunities where a team was up 3-1? They closed the door 31 out of the 32 times. So, yeah, I think that's a lot of pressure on the New York Knickerbockers.
10 years after the Cavs did it, the only time coming back from a 3-1 deficit in NBA Finals history. Could have happened 10 years later? It could. I don't think it will. Here's why I also agree that the pressure's on the Knicks. Like, they're so close to their first title since 1973. And they're a very good team. I mean, obviously, you don't win 13 straight games in the postseason. You don't lead 3-1 in the finals against a really good team unless you're a really good team. But the Spurs are going to be here for a while. They're just going to be better and better and better. Where the Knicks, it's almost like a Zverev.
Yeah.
They don't do it now when. And they've got a good team. I'm not saying they couldn't do it, but the Spurs, you look at the Spurs next year, I mean, they're probably going to enter the season as the favorite.
Are them
or the Thunder.
Are you guys kind of like with all the celebrities and seeing like all the Knicks fans traveling to San Antonio and all these ticket prices that they're putting out there? Are you guys kind of hoping to see a collapse? Because I'll be honest with you, that would be a lot of fun for me.
I've been rooting for the Knicks for some reason. I don't know what's gotten into me because I'm a Bulls fan. I'm supposed to hate the Knicks, but
I would love to see all these celebrities and just devastation. For them losing in game seven.
It depends on the celebrity, though. Like, some of the guys we really like. Seeing Jerry Seinfeld happy, that's cool. Seeing Larry David, you know?
Yeah.
Now, Taylor Swift was at... She was a Cavs fan because of her fiancé, and now she's a Knicks fan.
Yeah.
I bet Travis isn't liking that too much. He's going to dump her, isn't he? Taylor Swift is under... I'm kidding.
She's getting ready for the wedding at MSG.
All right.
But it's like, I want the Knicks collapse, but the Spurs are making me so upset that I don't think they deserve it either. So it's like, how do I just... I can't root for them both to lose. But like the Spurs aren't helping me squash the enemy. And so now they're becoming the enemy.
Can you imagine the tension in New York for Game 6 if they lose Game 5? And all of a sudden, they can either become NBA champs or you're sending it back to San Antonio for a Game 7. That's pressure.
That's what I want to see.
Now, if the Knicks would win in Game 7, that'd be awesome. I'd like to see a Game 7, but I don't know why. I've just been pulling for the Knicks. I like Jalen Brunson a lot. They've got, like, a fun team. I've always liked Mike Brown. Like, they don't have any guys on their team that are unlikable. I didn't think Wemby was going to be unlikable. He's kind of turning unlikable with some of the stuff that he does. Have you noticed this?
He's kind of got a little... The physical play, the cheap shots.
Cheap shots, right. Now, as skinny as he is, I don't mind physical play because that's one thing about Chet Holmgren I hate is he's just the opposite of physical. No, it's some of the other stuff, just some of the trash talking, some of the antics. Like, I didn't think that was him. I mean, he's an absolute freak of nature, but he's becoming a little bit unlikable.
Yeah, he's so different though for me. Like, my eyes just like completely like fixate when he's on the court. Like, it's like, where is he? So for me, I still like it. And I know that there's been some cheap shots and stuff. He's young. I have no problem with Wemby.
I didn't think I did. I thought I liked him a lot, but he's been doing some stuff that I thought was just, I don't know, nothing crazy. He doesn't seem like a bad guy by any means. It just was on the floor. He's done some things that I'm just like, not a big fan of.
He's painting in gardens before games.
Painting in gardens. He's going to the local library and reading to kids. He's a good guy, I think, off the court. He's just done some punkish things, I'll put it that way, on the court that I was not a big fan of. All right. What I am a big fan of is our brand new segment, Old School versus New School. That's coming up next. This is Rothman and Ice.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Like trying to snap a picture of Bigfoot. Nobody has ever witnessed Maddie eating a carb. This is Rothman and Ice.
Welcome back to the show. Dave Biddle, Scotty Vegas, Cole Bartimas, and now we welcome in Isaiah Jacob as well for our brand new segment, Old School versus New School. Shockingly, Scotty and I are going
Old school, baby.
We're repping the Unks, the old school. Repping the Utes, or Cole and Isaiah. All right, Scotty, tell the good people about the new segment.
All right, and here's the backstory on this, guys. So last week, I'm writing out a promo for Hollywood Casino for our little watch party, for our World Cup watch party that we're going to be doing. We're doing one tonight. And in it, I talk about next Friday night and how you can play hooky from work and come join us out at the casino. And Jake, who is about 21 years old, he's an intern and he does a great job in our promotions department, is like, he's reading through the script and he's like, play hooky? How old are you? And I'm like, well, isn't that a relatively normal phrase to use? And he's like, no, that's like you're an 80-year-old man. So with left it in there and it's in the promo and he keeps making fun of me every time it airs. So I'm like, that's kind of an old school way to look at it. So you and I, Dave, we're in our 40s/early 50s. I won't say who's in the 50s, who's in the 40s.
I'm 50 exactly.
Okay. Well, you just said it then. Yeah. Isaiah and Cole in the 20s. So we're going to do a little contest. We're going to have about 10 different questions that we're going to read out. We're going to answer these questions and compare old school versus new school. So the very first one, the first Buckeye game you ever remember watching. What is the first Buckeye game? Write it down on your board, and then we'll go around the table.
And this is on TV. It could be in the stadium, but it doesn't have to be in the stadium, correct?
No, this is your, yeah, anywhere.
First time we can Buckeye remember watching an Ohio State
football
game.
You have, yep.
Yeah.
All right, Dave?
All right. Showing my age here. I was 6 years old. 1982 Ohio State Michigan game. And I have a good story. My dad had just installed a burglar alarm. Is that even still a term?
No.
No, of course not. That's what we call it, a burglar
old
alarm.
School.
And it put his, like, this house is insured by Smith & Wesson sign out there. Anyway, we just had this burglar alarm put in. Next door, diehard Michigan fan lived next door to us, other than that good guy. His dad played for Michigan. He was legit. My dad would open the window every time Ohio State would score a touchdown, and it would be, you could hear all around the neighborhood, woo, 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 and leave it open for like a minute for a touchdown, leave it open a little less for a field goal every time Ohio State scored.
Sort of,
Ohio State won 24-14. That was Tim Spencer, Marcus Merrick, and the boys. And that's the first time I can ever remember watching an Ohio State game and my dad harassing the neighborhood.
All right, the other old school answer out of me is 95. And this was Eddie George, Bobby Hoying, all those guys, Orlando Pace. 95, the kickoff classic. And it was Ohio State and Boston College. And that was the first game on the run for Eddie to win the Heisman. So that's my first OSU football memory. That's old school. What's new school?
For me, the very first time, and it's hilarious because the very first time that I remember watching a game, I also cried during the game.
Oh.
And this would be the OSU-Florida National Championship game. That was the first game that I can recall. Clearly, I watched games before that because I was emotionally attached enough to cry during the game, but I cannot remember games before that. So that is my first memory, Teddy Ginn.
I got Zeke beat by a year, and it's very on brand for me. I got Ohio State-Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl in January 2nd, 2006, Laura Quinn with the split jersey. That would be the first one that I recall, which is a little bit shocking. I thought it'd be sooner than that because the first football game I remember, period, would have been the Patriots-Panthers Super Bowl. So I would have been four, except I would have been 6 years old for this Buckeye game.
And I was at that game that you're talking about, Cole, that Fiesta Bowl. I was out at that. Yeah, yeah.
That was back in the outdoor stadium.
It was. Yeah, it was Tempe.
That beautiful Sun Devil Stadium. I miss it.
All right, next question. Name the Major League Baseball player you grew up loving the most as a kid.
Wait, dude, where were you do favorite song?
We're skipping ahead. We got a different number.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah. I think you know mine, right?
Gosh. No, I don't.
Eric Davis. Yep. Eric Davis
is mine.
I
was thinking that it was Eric Davis, but then I was thinking that was also Ryan Baker's.
Yep.
For me, Chipper Jones. Big Chipper Atlanta Jones. Braves fan growing up.
Wayne. So,
for me, Larry Chipper Jones.
For me, to toss up, I went with two. Grady Sizemore and Shin Soo Choo are my two favorites.
I loved Choo one year when he was with the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
Had a good year, too. turned it into a monster contract with the Rangers.
A bunch of good years.
So my favorite player from my team would have been Andrew McCutchen, but my first favorite player would have been Cardinals third baseman Scott Rolen.
Scott Rolen. All right, a little bit of a Chipper versus Rolen rivalry because they would kind of compete who would be the starting third baseman for the NL in the All-Star game.
The former Red Scott Rolen. Reds are really good at getting these guys after they are passed.
Yeah, on their third contract.
Rolen actually was good for the Reds, even though he's at the end of his run there. All right, what's up next?
I'm really interested in this one from all of you guys. So what is the sports collectible that you have that you absolutely had to have? Like, this is your number one sports collectible that you have at your house or apartment.
I'm not a huge collectibles guy, but I grew up loving collecting baseball cards, and the one that I really wanted, and I have a few of them, was the Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, Upper Deck. Yeah.
So that's the one that, like, that was what you had to have.
That's the one I had to have, yeah.
The one for me, I've got a few different ones, but after Ohio State has won the national championship, I've gotten, in my lifetime, I've gotten the quarterback from the national championship team to sign an Ohio State helmet. So obviously I've got Cardale, who signed one. I've got Craig Krenzel, and I've got Will Howard. I'm anxiously awaiting to get another championship and get Julian Sain to do it. But that's my collectible.
When I was younger, my favorite team by far, Ohio State and the Cleveland Browns. And so when the Browns drafted Brian Rubisky, all I wanted as a child was the Brian Rubisky rookie card, and I did obtain it, and I still have it to this day, but my answer would be the Brian Rubisky. Unfortunate career for Brian coming over to the Browns, but that was mine.
So there's a little hometown flavor in this one, because being from Dublin, I had a neighbor who I think graduated high school with Brady Quinn, and one year for Christmas, we got a BQ signed football. So there you go.
I like that.
I would have preferred an A.J. Hawk signed football, but what are you going to do?
The other
you already won the game, so it's fine.
All right.
Sister can help you out with both of those.
The other collectible for me was I have gotten all the mini helmets of the 12-team playoff for Ohio State all the way on the wall. So I've got that kind of in my basement where I filled out the entire bracket.
That's pretty
with
cool.
Mini helmets. So, all right. Next up, who has the best college football uniforms, excluding Ohio State?
Okay, if we're just going to do one, I wrote down Texas, but I also have, in parentheses, Florida State. I like both of them a lot, and I kind of went back and forth. I love, Texas is very simple. Very simple, but I like it. Just the Longhorn on the helmets, the burnt orange, this is Texas. I like Florida State's helmets and always have. I like their colors. If I had to pick one, it'd be Texas, but it's really close between Texas and Florida State for me.
Something about USC's home uniforms for me.
Yep.
Love them. I love the matchup when USC and UCLA do both their colored jerseys. Absolutely love that. So I'm going USC as the best.
See, I wrote down the first answer, which would be super new school, but I went ahead and crossed it out. That would be Oregon.
I knew it.
But I moved off of it because, honestly, in this past season, the powder blues of Ole Miss, I think, are my new favorite.
Those were sweet.
College football jersey.
I don't like how they're becoming the main jersey, though. I liked them better when they were alternates, and you only saw them once a year. And so now it's like it's less exclusive. I will go either Texas or LSU. At one point in time, I would have said Oregon, but they kind of won't stick with a uniform, and so they're actually, I think, getting away from some of their best work.
Yeah, I like LSU, too. I'm a big fan of LSU's uniform as well. All right, guys, this one will be fun. Which Wolverine do you hate the most?
Desmond Howard, for sure. And it's not just, I mean, like, I respect Charles Woodson a lot. You know, he's a Michigan homer, but it's just a different level with Desmond. It's just almost embarrassing listening to him. So I'm going to go with Desmond Howard.
It's too easy for me, I think, to write down Desmond. I actually wrote down Tumunga Biakabatuka because Isaiah was talking about tears during a game. Biakabatuka ruined my first ever Ohio State-Michigan experience, where it went crazy, ran for 300-plus yards.
314 yards.
314.
Bill Young, the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, still owes him, I think Biakabatuka still owes Bill Young money, Biak Batuka ended up going before Eddie George in the draft a few months later because of that game. That was not a good pick by the Panthers, but what are you going to do?
What's the new school answer on Wolverine you hate the most?
See, I think with more time, I think J.J. McCarthy and Aiden Hutchinson will be in this, but they're not my answer yet. It's way too fresh, but I think 10 years from now, they might be some people's answers. Mine is Jabril Peppers.
Ooh, I like that.
I could not stand Jabril Peppers, the do-it-all Wolverine. I was so glad when the Buckeyes were able to defeat them that year, but Jabril Peppers was by far and away.
I like a lot of your guys' answers better than my own because I didn't really have one that stood out, but the Jabril one's pretty good. So I went with the guy who I just thought was lame, and that's Shea Patterson.
Oh,
that's a good
one. That's good. Quick Jabril Pepper story. So I was at, this was the Curtis Samuel double overtime touchdown win game, and I was at that game, and I saw a kid who I thought he was at the time maybe 18 to 20 years old, and he was in a Peppers jersey, and he was in the stands, and I was about three or four rows behind, and he's just sitting there real sad looking at the entire field as Buckeye fans are all over the field, and I get a picture of me just laughing and making fun of this kid. And then, of course, I end up seeing he's actually like a 13-year-old and literally had tears coming down his cheeks.
Oh, no, Scotty.
I felt a little bad at the time making fun, but then, you know what? He's a Michigan guy, so screw him. All right, next, favorite SportsCenter anchor. Now, maybe SportsCenter is more old school than new school.
They're probably what is that?
Yeah, what?
Is that the thing that's on before, like, First Take? But seriously, I wrote down, because I have two. I know who yours is going to be, and I love him, too. Uh-huh. I'm not going to steal your thunder. So I went with Kenny Mayne.
Oh.
It's almost a tie between my top two. So I think I know yours.
It's a good choice. Mine is Craig Kilborn.
Resourceful.
Yep. Oh, resourceful. Love Craigie.
I love him too.
And this is, I think, an old school even conversation. Because when me and Scotty were talking about this the other day of our favorite ESPN reporters and whatnot, I couldn't even think of old ones. Like the first one that comes to mind for me immediately was Scott Van Pelt.
Scott Van Pelt. Okay.
That was the first one for me, and because like ESPN isn't even a thing that I turn on anymore.
That's crazy. When we were like your age, like maybe a little young. Like when we were in college, I was talking with my buddies the night we were at the casino about this. That was when the half-hour SportsCenter. And it would be the 2 a.m. SportsCenter, the field good edition.
Yes.
And then the next morning, we would watch that same SportsCenter. Let's say we started at 9. We'd be watching that till like 11 a.m., maybe 11:30. Watching the same SportsCenter over and over and over again. That's how good it was back then.
All right, my number one is Neil Everett.
Oh, that's a good one.
And I got two honorable mentions. So my dad went to high school with John Butchergrass, so that's
one
honorable mention. And I don't know why she only does tennis coverage now, but I really like Chris McKendry.
Yes.
She only shows up for the majors.
That's true.
For tennis.
I like that.
I forgot that she was a sports center. Yeah.
And those are a little old school, right?
That's
I feel like
good.
Those guys have been around for a long time.
I feel like we need another segment of this. What do you think?
More questions.
More old school, new school coming at you next. This is Rothman and Ice.
Zero.
Common Man and Timmy.
Every public bathroom
should
have white noise.
Or they should just blast Gavin DeGraw.
I don't want to be anything.
Common Man and Timmy Afternoons on the Fan is sponsored by the Hinderer Motor Company. The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Matty promises he'll continue to do the show even if he wins the lottery. If only we believed him. You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
Welcome back to the show. Dave Biddle, Scotty Vegas, Isaiah Jacob, and Cole Bartemus at the controls. If you're just tuning in, Anthony and Maddie have a well-deserved day off. We're trying to hold the fort down, and we're having some fun. We're doing an old school versus new school segment. Scotty and I repping the Unks, of course, and we've got Isaiah, and we've got Cole repping the Utes. All right, what's the next category we got, Scotty?
And I will tell you, the YouTube chat loves the SportsCenter anchor conversation. So we might dig deeper into that a little bit later on in the show.
We've got some old school people in the chat. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, probably. But all right, let's go to the best stadium or arena anthem or song. Okay, that you can go a lot of different ways with this.
Now, I would like this regardless of my favorite NFL team. I always liked Welcome to the Jungle. I mean, the way that starts out. I mean, that just, Welcome to the Jungle. Now, if you're a Bengals fan, it just goes to the stratosphere. But that song, that gets you pumped up. That gets you really pumped. I was tempted to say Seven Nation Army, But I'm going Welcome to the Jungle.
I will say I love when you made up words to Mr. Brightside. We won't get into that today. I think that's more of a weekend thing. We got to do that on the money.
I think you even liked the second verse even more than the first.
I did, yes. All right, so for me, I love when the entire arena or stadium is singing the song. So everybody's got to know the words. So I kind of like the Don't Stop Believin'. I think that's kind of a fun one. And then I use that one for my betting purposes too. Living on a Prayer. Oh we're halfway there on the parlay. So
a little Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
For me, it is no question when you answered this or asked us this. Oh. I immediately thought.
I thought I see your thing. I was close to putting that.
It's Mo Bamba. It is 100%. I immediately go to the Penn State clip where that place is rocking in the White House. It is Mo Bamba.
I was flirting with danger, giving a very new school answer. I almost said it, but...
Seven Nation Army.
Yeah.
It's funny to say that now. That's an old school. I don't even think of that as that old school.
Early 2000s,
I was going to say, if it happened this century, it's got to be it's somewhat new school for me.
Next up, sports announcer... You can't stand the most.
Let me cue up his audio.
Jeez. Go ahead. Can I go with Desmond again? He does not. He has done like actual like announcing. He's bad at that too. Or does that not count?
Ooh. Yeah, I think that counts.
Okay.
He's bad.
Desmond gets my vote on that one.
What's funny is I was thinking another way. I was thinking kind of all time. And I was thinking Mark May as the commentator that I hated the most. But I like your call on Desmond. It'd be a good battle between Desmond and Mark May.
I think for me, it might be Tony Romo. Oh, wow. I think it actually might be Tony Romo. In the beginning, I liked him, but I cannot stand watching him now. I've completely flipped 360 on him.
Can you believe that, Jim? Can you believe that, Jim?
You ready?
Yeah.
And it's intercepted at the goal line. Unbelievable. Wow, Jack Sawyer.
Gus Johnson is a clown.
Oh, no.
He is a caricature of himself.
Oh, I didn't even know that was Gus.
I knew you were going to say that. I
see, 100%. The fact that you didn't know that was Gus Johnson just shows...
That hurts.
That he's lost his way.
That hurts because
he's lost his way.
That his call on Ron Lewis's game-winning shot in Lexington... My favorite call of all time. So, gosh, that hurts, Cole.
And Gus has had some really good football calls, like with Denzel Ward, you know, barbecue back there. You didn't invite me. But I do think he's a much better basketball announcer. March Madness with Gus Johnson was cool.
Yeah.
But football, I could take or leave him.
New school Gus Johnson, not as good as old school Gus there Johnson is what you're saying.
Ding.
All right, next up, sports team that isn't Michigan that you hate the most.
Cole. Become deaf for about 5 seconds. The Pittsburgh Steelers. And I will say this, though. Unlike Michigan, no, I have respect for Michigan's football program when they're not cheating. I have a lot of respect for their football program through the years. I respect the heck out of the Steelers. The reason I hate them is because they've just been torturous to the Bengals for most of my life. So I'll go with the Steelers, even though I respect them.
Yeah, for me, all my life I've hated Duke basketball. Big college basketball guy. And honestly, it's mostly just jealousy. But Duke basketball for me.
I appreciate that honesty.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh Steelers. No questions. Almost ruined my childhood. I can think back to when I was riding the bus in like third and fourth grade. It felt like the entire bus were Steelers fans. And I felt like I was being bullied as a Browns fan.
In
Ohio.
I know.
It was unbelievable. The Steelers have... Troy Polamalu and Big Ben pretty much ruined my childhood on Sundays.
Those bandwagon fans on your bus. Jeez.
USC stands for University of Spoiled Children. Most of the football players chose USC over UCLA because it's easier to spell. Go tell Southern Cal to bring a damn lunch because it's going to be a long-ass day.
Enough said.
Next, biggest sports scandal that comes to mind for you. Biggest sports scandal in your life.
I went with Black Sox, even though it was way before
that's
your time.
Awesome. You're old school, but you're not that old school.
I barely remember. I don't know if you guys do. No, but like that's the biggest one. I mean, like, even though my Reds were the benefactors of that. And there's been some talk over the years, did he really throw it? I don't know, man. I mean, you throw the World Series, it's got to be that, in my opinion.
For me, I'm going back to baseball and the steroid era. Gosh, that was when I absolutely loved Major League Baseball. And actually loved the steroid era, the home run chase and all that stuff. It's funny because once the steroid era ended and it was like, not as big of a baseball fan anymore. So that scandal I loved.
And the pitchers were using too. I always point this out. It'd be one thing if Barry Bonds was using and McGuire's using and Sosa's using and Roger Clemens is out there completely clean and Andy Pettit. They were all using. So I'm one of these guys. I think Bonds' record should not have an asterisk by it because he was facing guys that were using too. Go ahead, Isaiah.
100% Deflategate. Right off the rip, when you said scandal, I immediately thought Deflategate was the first thing that came to mind.
That's a good one. Not to make it weird, but Penn State, that's definitely what I think of.
Oh, that's a... Yep.
If we considered... I mean, and it is. Way, I mean...
Well, yeah. So, that's a scandal. That's,
by the way...
Oh, definitely a scandal.
Yeah. So funny how a couple of segments ago, Scotty Vegas was trying to be nice, being like, I won't say who's in his 40s and who's in his 50s, and then Dave Biddle's like, yeah, I'm man, 50. The Black Sox, biggest scandal of my life. Amen out.
I remember
Shoeless Joe.
I remember it well.
Moonlight Graham, we're going to get him.
I was like, well, the Reds won, so who am I to pick on the Shoeless Joe Jackson and the Black Sox? All right, we got one more, I believe, or two more. Two
yeah,
more.
Let's go with
two more quickly.
And this is a really random one. Who is the first Chargers player that comes to mind? Real quick, no thinking. First Chargers.
LaDainian Tomlinson.
I'm going to go Ryan Leaf.
LaDainian Tomlinson was also for me. Right. Second, maybe Sean Marion would be the second one.
I was thinking Phillip Rivers.
I actually thought of Drew Brees before I thought of Phillip Rivers for some odd reason.
Wow.
I don't know why I thought of Ryan Leaf.
Eli Manning.
Yeah.
He was drafted by them. I'm joking. All right, last one.
One obscure athlete from when we were 16 years old.
Okay, so that would have been 1992. I'm going to go with Ohio State running back who was drafted as a defensive back in the NFL, Butler Binote.
Okay, so...
Butler Binote.
That's a good one. All right, I'm going to go obscure Buckeye, too. Let's go... Let's see, 16 would have been about 2000. Let me go with Kenyon Rambo.
Ooh, I like that.
As my very random player.
The first person that came to mind for me when I was 16 years old would be Paxton Lynch. Quarterback from Northern Illinois. He's in the Heisman race for a little bit. I can remember watching him on TV, and I don't know why, but it stuck in my brain for years, the wanting him to be good.
I don't have a damn clue why I thought of this dude, but 2015, I would have been 16 years old. How about Blue Jays reliever Brett Cecil?
That is very random.
That was random.
There you go.
That was a lot of fun, guys.
As obscure as I can get for you.
A lot of fun. All right, up next is a deeper dive. This is Rothman and Ice on The Fan.
There's nothing Bo Bishop can't do well, except find competent co-hosts. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's T-Bo. Come.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. The College World Series begins today from Omaha, Nebraska, with Troy and West Virginia at 2, followed by Ole Miss and North Carolina at 7. MLB, Cleveland called up former top pitching prospect Daniel Espino from AAA Columbus. His Guardians host the Tigers at 7:10, while the Reds host the Diamondbacks at 7:15. AAA baseball, the Clippers visit the Indianapolis Indians at 7:05. High school baseball, Columbus area schools and state title games today. New Albany battles Harrison at 4, Columbus Academy duels Wayndale at 5, then Bishop Watterson faces Baden at 7. World Cup, Canada clashes with Bosnia and Herzegovina at 3, then the U.S. Opens play against Paraguay at 9. Golf, Hau Tung Lee leads round 2 of the RBC Canadian Open at 10-under. This update sponsored by Metal Supermarkets, your convenience store for metal. Visit Columbus at metalsupermarkets.com or 2180 Wilson Road for all your metal needs.
Most shows just skim the surface, but Rothman and Ice feel like the biggest story of the day deserves a closer look. It's time for A Deeper Dive.
Sponsored by Orthopedic One, Central Ohio's most trusted orthopedic practice. Find a physician or location near you at orthopedicone.com.
Welcome back to the show, Rothman and Ice, 97.1 The Fan. I am Dave Biddle, joined by Scotty Vegas, Cole Bartemus at the controls. If you're wondering about Anthony and Maddie, they are playing hooky today, Scott.
Yes, so the whole background of why we even did the old school versus new school was I'm writing the promo for our watch party for the World Cup at Hollywood Casino next Friday. And in it, I put in there, play hooky from work and come join us for the game next Friday at 3 o'clock. And the 21-year-old intern/recent grad from OU is like, why are you putting play hooky in your promo script? Like, what are you, an 80-year-old man? So,
like, and, no, that's Dave.
And ultimately, we're going back and forth, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? Playing hooky does sound a little weird. I don't think anybody uses that anymore.
We even said, like, we heard it a lot growing up, but we never used it. Like, if we were, like, in high school, like, you would never say you're playing hooky from school. You would say you're skipping school. You're ditching school.
Yeah, ditch school.
But I think the reason it was in our lexicon to some degree, even though we didn't use this, because our parents said it.
Right.
And our uncles, you know, aunts and, like, grandparents. It was definitely an old school thing that was passed on, but we went with skip school, ditch right. work.
Well, yeah. In the promo, which will start after tonight's World Cup match, it says play hooky. Cole, have you ever heard of play hooky?
Yes, I do know what that means.
Okay, so it's not that in outrageous.
Fact, I think Joshua Perry said that to me a couple weeks ago because I missed the day of work because I was sick. And the next day he saw me and goes, are you playing hooky? So I guess he would be 30...
If it's good,
was he 31, 32, somewhere in there?
Couldn't be much more than that. If it's good enough for Joshua Perry, it's good enough for me.
Exactly.
I can say that in any facet of life.
So it's going to be...
Good, if it's good for 37, it's good for me.
So it's going to be one heck of a promo.
I know in the past month or two, there was one time Matty Ice was getting on Rothman because he referred to marijuana as pot, and Ice said... That's such an old man way of describing it.
At least he didn't say grass. That's no, that's like
because that's there, really
grass. Reefer, grass. Well, reefer was still kind of like reefer madness. Then was
that's
grass.
Super old.
Grass is super old. Pot. You're right. Yeah.
So that didn't strike me any type of way. But that's funny that you bring that up because that was a recent example of Matty Ice getting on him for that. Like I guess that's an old man lingo that he had.
So this is Deeper Dive, and so one of the stories that came across to me actually was sent to me from a big Pitt football fan, and I initially was just laughing it off
that there was a big Pitt football fan.
Yeah,
that
they exist.
No, I'm kidding. I don't want the dozens of Pitt football fans getting mad at me. Sorry,
but what he sent me, he's like, "Oh, Mr. Beast was on campus, and he has been openly teasing the idea of funding a college football NIL team." And so Pat Narduzzi actually put out on social media a picture of Mr. Beast with a bunch of Pitt college football players. And, you know, so my buddy is like, oh my gosh, we are going to start seeing kind of the Mark Cuban, where Mark Cuban put a lot of money into an irrelevant football team in Indiana and helped lead them to a national championship and getting a lot of guys. And so could Mr. Beast do this at a relevant team like Pittsburgh? And so he's talking all, oh, here we go. You know, he's talking about spending $100 million in NIL money. So it got me thinking, Dave. Well, Ohio State has a lot of really famous fans, famous alums, millionaires, billionaires out there. Who's the rich guy that you would approach for the NIL money? And I'm going to put it for Ohio State basketball because it's a little bit more of an irrelevant and a program that struggled a little bit more. OSU football has tons of money. But if you were to put a bunch of money into Ohio State basketball, who would be that person you would go after?
Yeah, this just enhances it if it's just basketball. I would have said the same guy if we're talking football and basketball because he's a big fan of both. He's got tons of money, and that would be LeBron James.
Oh,
that'd be number one for sure.
Well, he's got his own locker, right?
He's got his own
locker.
Does
that still exist there?
Yes, it still exists there. And like from what I've been told, like he takes pride in that. Like it's not one of those things where LeBron's like, Ohio State gave me a locker. Who cares? I'm LeBron James. He actually is like flattered by that. So I imagine Gene Smith reached out to him. I imagine Ross Bjork has. But if they haven't, that would be, well, Gene doesn't need to reach out to him. I'm sure if Ross hasn't, hopefully he does. LeBron would be my number one, though.
So I pulled up a list, guys, of then I asked AI, hey, produce me a list of remarkable people from Ohio who have a lot of money that you could approach. And so here's the list of just some names, big names, and we're talking NIL donations. So here's what they threw out. They threw out Drew Carey and his connection to Cleveland. Dave Chappelle.
Ooh.
Yeah, how about that?
I don't know if he really likes Ohio State. I don't think he hates Ohio State. Yellow Springs, he owns the whole town, as he likes to say. Ooh, that'd be a good one.
We've got Halle Berry, born in Cleveland. Steven Hello. Spielberg, born in Cincinnati.
Really?
Nah, he's probably not an Ohio State guy then.
And then they threw out a few others. Jack Nicklaus.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
There's another one you go after. That's about it. The rest are like really old guys.
What about Buckeyes by association? Because there is a first baseman for the Phillies who's on a $330 million contract.
Yes, Bryce Harper. That's a good one. The thing is, though, Bryce Harper is very rich. LeBron is wealthy. You know what I mean? Like, LeBron would be my number one. The best thing would be is for those guys to get together, like LeBron and Jack and Bryce Harper and whoever else, and like have like a fun
Michael fit. Redd.
Michael Redd, exactly. Mike Conley. Mike Conley's played in the NBA now for like, what, 20 years, right? 19 years? Because his last year at Ohio State was obviously 07. 06, 07 was his only year at Ohio State, and he's been in the NBA ever since. He's got tons of money. LeBron's definitely the number one. You're talking about somebody like Mr. Beast, who I know has tons of money. Doesn't have as much money as Mark Cuban, I guarantee you that. And Mark's got a lot of time on his hands now if he made it the foolish decision to give up majority control of the Mavericks. And he still thought, he's a great businessman, right? He thought after he did that, he would still control basketball ops. He thought that until they traded Luka. Then he found out, no, you don't control basketball ops.
So just talking Mike Conley, the number of years in the NBA made me look at his career earnings. And I about fell over. I had no idea it was close to this. Yes.
Okay. I remember like he signed one that was at the time it was a max deal. Okay, I'm trying to think. I bet Mike Conley in his career's got $800 million.
Oh, it's not that much.
No.
Oh, okay. One of his contracts was like close to $2 million total, wasn't it? Or $200 million.
He signed a 5-year $153 million contract.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of. Okay, only 153. Wow. So I was way too much. I was saying $500 million.
I have to bring my guess up because I was going to say 215. That's gonna be way short. This has got to be flirting with like 350.
$295 million
there in
earnings. Good. Yeah, I think we can approach him about some NIL money.
Yeah, definitely. Now, again, I think those guys pulling their money together would be great. Again, if we had a GM running the basketball team, that might help with stuff like this. What are they doing over there? Why are they treating this like it's a D2 basketball program or something? This is Ohio State. And when I covered the basketball team every day, that was during the Thad Mata era. So I know firsthand, and Buckeye basketball fans know firsthand, what this program can be. It's fallen off so much, and it's sad, and it's stuff like that. I almost call it little stuff like that. That's not little in this day and age. To not have a GM, not have your version of Mark Pantone, and my friends, I understand it's completely different, or it's different with basketball. When you have 15 guys on the roster compared to 105, obviously it's more important in football to have a GM. But Pantone is not like a one-man band. He's got like a staff working for him. So you got a GM plus a whole staff working for him. The basketball team doesn't have that. Basically, Jake Diebler is the GM.
Yeah, here's why I agree with that. Just because of the lack of success they've had with hitting on guys in the transfer portal, right? To me, it's like you look back the last 5-6 years, it's been they're batting like 100 as far as good transfers in. And the couple that jumped to mind, one is Jameson Battle. He ended up being a really good transfer in. Micah Parrish was another one who I think ended up being a pretty good transfer in. But other than a select few, they have missed a lot in the portal, and I think a lot of that is scouting. And they've missed a lot in the last couple years, too. So for me, I'm with you. It's like, why has there not been more attention towards hiring a general manager? Because they've talked about it for months. This has been on the radar for a long time. Why has this not happened?
You know, it's interesting, Scott. I want to get your perspective on this. I imagine we've talked about this before on the money, but do you remember the Ross Bjork's introductory press conference with Ted Carter and all that? Like, we've been around Ohio State athletics for a long time. We've always known football is king and basketball takes a step back compared to football, but they never came out and said that. Until that press conference, Ted Carter came out there, who was no longer the president, came out there and said, hey, football is king. I was like, that took me aback a little bit because we all know that's the case, but I've never heard somebody in power at Ohio State putting it like that. Ross Bjork then, you know, was introduced. He said basically the same thing, football is king. And I kind of like that. I'm like, good. I'm glad they're recognizing where the moneymaker is. But like, it feels like basketball's just been devalued. And I know if we were talking to Ross Bjork right now, he would disagree with that. He said, no, we haven't devalued. We want our basketball program to be the best in the nation. I'm sure he does. But, you know, when you look at it, stuff like not having a GM, Diebler, I believe, is the lowest paid coach in the Big Ten. NIL money's not there. It's like they've, it's not a forgotten thing, Scotty, with basketball. But I mean, I tell you what, they lived up to it. Football's definitely king, and basketball's taking a huge backseat.
So one thing that did bother me, guys, is the fact that Michigan goes, wins a national championship in basketball. We saw a few years ago when this happened in football, and then the offseason for Ohio State, as soon as Michigan football won a national championship, OSU ended up like emptying the pockets and, okay, we are going to spend. We are going to make sure that we are the elite of the elite, and then they win the national championship the next year. Ohio State basketball sees Michigan basketball win a national championship. And I just didn't see the urgency, the like, okay, we see Michigan can do it. They can get to the mountaintop. Now we need to really focus and get ourselves up there. And I think they've had an okay off season. I don't dislike a lot of their ads in the transfer portal and the hirings as far as assistant coaches, but nothing was a splash, right? And after seeing your rival win a national championship, I expected a splash in this offseason.
Up next is Pre-Snap Reads. This is Rothman and Ike.
What's the best way to make sure you don't miss any of your favorite fan shows?
Oh, no.
Download the Fan app, silly.
God damn it, I knew that.
App Store, Google Play, or just scream right at your phone. Psst, you can also listen to Buckeye Games. Do it now. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly cloudy skies will turn into sunshine throughout the day today with gradual clearing, highs getting in the mid to low 80s, and then for tonight, clear skies with lows down into the 60s. We will kick off your weekend on Saturday with plenty of sunshine in the forecast and highs getting in the mid to upper 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Rothman and Ice present Pre-Snap Reads.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
All right, Pre-Snap Reads. I imagine, Cole, there's not a lot of times when the star players of the Baltimore Ravens and Cincinnati Bengals are in congruence celebrating over something, but if a certain sack maniac gets traded out of the division, they like that. Let's hear from Ja'Marr Chase and Lamar Jackson.
Here's Lamar Jackson first.
I'm like, yes. I'm going to see him too. But then we got the other guy from the... Yeah, like, he good too, you know. So, man, shouts out to him, you know. Shouts out to Miles, you know. Congratulations on that. But, yes, that's awesome.
So he says that's awesome as the Miles Garrett getting traded out of the division. Here's Ja'Marr Chase.
Good for us. I don't really care, but good for us, you know.
Yeah. What was your reaction when you saw that come down?
Yay, and then back to practice. I mean, I really don't care at the end of the day, but, you know, it's just making it a little more of a chance, you know. It's always had a chance, but, you know, higher chance now.
I love Ja'Marr Chase. His voice cracks me up, though. He's got a funny voice. It's not like an Evan Turner funny voice, right, but it's like approaching those levels. Evan Turner, who sounded like a Muppet, but we love it. We love Evan Turner around here. All right, what else you got, my friend?
Well, there you go. What I wanted to know from you guys is, as it pertains, and we've talked a lot about this on our show, is that from the Miles Garrett angle, it's frustrating for Browns fans to lose somebody who really was like your only sense of hope, because the last season for the Browns really was so centered around Miles Garrett's sack record up to a certain point. And so now that you don't even have that entering this season, where you have like this kind of doomsday quarterback battle between Deshaun Watson and Shador Sanders, where, you know, it's got just from chatter and airtime, it's kind of seeming like Deshaun Watson's the favorite at this point. And so it's such a tough situation for Browns fans to be in. However, we were able to, because the news broke in the middle of our show when it took place, but it does make a lot of sense for Browns fans. Jared Verse, you have a lot of club control with him. So he's young. You have him for 3 years on his rookie contract, and I assume you'll extend him. So let's just say 7 years total. But it's tough, guys, for Browns fans to see Miles Garrett go. It's probably going to be tough if he wins a Super Bowl with the Rams, because there's going to be a party. In fact, we were kind of debating this. Me, Jacob Reimer, Dylan Gonzalez, and Isaiah Jacob, who was just on the show. We were debating this on Sunday of, like, if you're a Browns fan, are you rooting for Miles Garrett to win a Super Bowl? Because is that like, are you kind of like partially claiming that as a victory of your own?
It reminds me so much of Stafford going to the Rams, not just because they're both going to the Rams. And then Detroit fans were kind of, you know, split on that when he won the Super Bowl his first year. But then what happened to Detroit? After all those bad years, they decided, okay, finally we're going to rebuild. And look, it didn't take them very long to have a really good team. So I think it was a great trade for the Browns. I think it was a great trade for the Rams. I think it's going to be one of those trades we look back on that was great for both teams. And I know Isaiah disagrees with me on this next point, and many other Browns fans do as well. I think if you're going to trade Myles Garrett like they did, build for the future, I would also trade Denzel Ward. And I know, like Isaiah's point is, that'd be like a lot to handle in one offseason. You lose Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward. Yeah, but do you want to go all in on your plan or kind of go like a little bit more than half in? Like if I'm trading Myles Garrett and building for the future, I'm trading Denzel Ward, getting extra picks, maybe a young player, a young defensive back in the Jared Verse mold, stack some picks. I would basically tank this year so I could get the best picks available next year. I would trade Denzel Ward, but I think the Myles Garrett trade, I think that was a good trade for both teams. And I don't know. I think Browns fans are definitely going to have mixed emotions. I don't think they're going to be sad if he wins the Super Bowl, because they know they weren't going to win the Super Bowl, but they're probably going to be like, damn it, I wish he would have like been a Brown to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know. It kind of feels both ways, right? Like, yeah. Like if one of my favorite players gets traded to another team and they end up winning it all, it's like, it's a mixed emotions, I feel like, is the best way to describe that. But, like, I'm all in with you. Like, I feel like it's got to be full-on tank. It's got to be tank mode. You got to get the best picks that you can at this point. And I think if you're a Browns fan, you're loving the fact that you've made this trade for the future. So, for me, like, I thought it was an A trade for the Browns.
I agreed.
So, yeah, I love it.
Totally. And they drafted really well the last couple of years, like, and Andrew Berry, I think, takes some heat unfairly for the Deshaun Watson. We'll never know for sure. I would bet my life that was Jimmy Haslam 100% pulling the strings on Deshaun Watson. I bet Andrew Berry just had to take one for the team there. He's done a good job drafting. It's going to be really interesting. But, yeah, I think that was a very good trade for the Browns and the Rams.
It's just how people talk about trades, where it's like in your mind, there's got to be a winner and a loser. But when you have two teams that are in two completely different situations in their franchises, it's like, you know, we're getting our share, neither one cared, basically. And so it did make a lot of sense for the Browns to do that, as tough as that is.
I will say this. I'm still a little skeptical on this 2027 quarterback draft class. Not as skeptical as I was going into last year, but like people are still acting like nothing happened with Arch Manning through the first eight games last year, that he didn't look completely lost. Oh, he turned it on at the end of the year. But now people are still convinced that Arch Manning is going to be the number one pick. Maybe he will be. Do we feel like he's a sure thing?
People are hyping up Lenoris Sellers again.
Dante, and I like Dante Moore a lot, but he was inconsistent last year. He's erratic. Like, I don't see a surefire just, okay, this guy's an absolute stud. Now, at this time last year, were we saying that about Fernando Mendoza? No, someone's going to come out of nowhere. But the guys that are kind of the usual suspects up there, I don't know. I'm not saying they're bad quarterbacks. I think C.J. Carr is a very good quarterback. I think Julian Sands should be getting more love. Like, he was midway through last year. People don't even talk about him now. I still think it's a good quarterback class, and we'll find out. Are you buying that this is going to be some great quarterback class?
I'm buying the fact that it feels like it's a really deep class.
Yes.
And so it feels like this coming season you might have one or two guys that separate. But you're right. Like, Mendoza last year at this time was 100-1 to be the number one pick in the draft. Like, so we didn't see that one coming at all. Like, we figured he could be a fringe first round pick at this time last year, and he busts out. So, you know, the reason for optimism to me is there is a deep number of guys. There's five or six that you could name that kind of you feel like could break out this year and separate and maybe be that top one or two picks.
Last year they were talking about Cade Klubnik.
Right.
Was he like a seventh round pick or something like that? Like,
Nussmeier was a seventh round pick. Klubnik was like fourth or fifth.
Okay. Yeah, those are some of the guys. Yeah, even last year, Lenora Sellers was getting a lot of airplay. Carson Beck was, too. He ended up finishing the year very strong. Played well against Ohio State. Was the first pick of the third round. So nothing crazy
Carson
there.
Carson Beck will probably start a football game this year.
Yes, because their quarterbacks are Gardner Minshew and Jacoby Brissett. Yeah, you use the first pick of the third round. Like, if they fall out of contention, which they're the Cardinals, so they probably will. Hopefully not. They got a ton of Buckeyes on that team. Paris Johnson Jr., Marvin Harrison Jr., and some others. So hopefully they're not bad, but we'll see. Speaking of the Cardinals and their former quarterback, Kyler Murray, I'm not buying it's any type of real competition in Minnesota. He's won that job. And the reporters up there are saying J.J. looks erratic during OTAs. And then he was asked about, is there any, like, awkwardness between you and Kyler, and he gave a very awkward answer, JJ did. Kyler was asked the same question, gave a very professional response. And listen, I know Kyler Murray's been a disappointment in the NFL, but I think, especially with what they've done with quarterbacks, you know, in Minnesota, I don't think that that's a legit competition. I think Kyler Murray's going to win the job. And Scotty, I think he's going to at least have a good year up there.
You know, it's funny because I do feel like at this point now, we got to hesitate a little bit to throw quarterbacks away and call them a bust so quickly. Because we saw what Sam Darnold did after what everybody assumed was, okay, that he's never going to be an elite quarterback. And now he goes and wins a Super Bowl and he's an awesome quarterback. So I don't completely want to throw away J.J. McCarthy, but the eye test feels like we should throw away J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah. Where do you put Baker in there? I don't, because he actually had success in Cleveland, but then fell off, went to the Panthers and didn't do anything there. Then he went to L.A., which, even though it was only a few games, that had to help him being with McVay with the Rams. And now he's like a good quarterback with, I don't think he's elite. He's good. He's a good starting quarterback.
Yeah, but that's another good example of a quarterback that we at one point figured, okay, he's done. Kind of like Justin Fields. We feel like he might have one more shot in him, maybe. But a lot of people are ready to throw him away as a complete bust.
I think that was a good pickup by the Chiefs. He's a guy that if, now I know Mahomes is coming back from an injury, so there's a chance Justin could start the season, but it sounds like Mahomes is going to start. But if he has to miss a game or two, now if Mahomes has to miss multiple, you know, five or six games, they might be in big trouble. Fields is a guy that can go in there and win a couple games for you. So I think that was a good pickup for a backup quarterback. All right, up next, we're going to take a 2-minute break, and then it's time for Tell the Truth. This is Rothman and I.
Cooling.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Anthony's hidden talent is weaving a movie quote into every conversation. It's mostly not annoying. You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
All right, I said we're going to do some Tell the Truth. I'm going to have to tell the truth. That's actually the next segment. So right now we're going to talk some Ohio State football.
Does that count towards our total? The answer is no.
That would be over.
You're the cop of the show. I'll let you decide that.
I'll say no.
Okay.
That wasn't an on-the-money reference, so it's okay.
I can't believe I haven't said those three words yet on the show. I've made some other mistakes, though. Ohio State football. All right, there was a pretty cool story in The Athletic a couple days ago, and it looked at the best move for every Power 4 team in college football. Every Power 4 team, their one best move of the offseason. And this could be a player you landed in the transfer portal, could be a recruit you landed, could be a certain player that could have went to the NFL that you retained, could be a new coach that you hired, either head coach, assistant coach, whatever, could be a coach that you retained. And the gentleman who wrote the story for The Athletic, he went with, his name Manny Navarro, he went with Chris Henry Jr. signing with Ohio State was the best move of the offseason for Ohio State, and made a salient argument. I would go with the best move for Ohio State of the offseason is bringing in Arthur Smith as offensive coordinator. I think he's going to be a big improvement over Brian Hartline. Brian Hartline, the best in the business at recruiting wide receivers and developing wide receivers. But I think he was over his head as an offensive coordinator. And it's twofold. It allows Ryan Day to take a step back and be more of a CEO, which he was not able to really do last year. He was able to do that the previous year when they had Chip Kelly. And I think Arthur Smith is going to help some of the deficiencies Ohio State had to deal with last year. Red zone, short yardage, which a lot of times goes together. Run game in general, and the offensive line. I mean, he's an offensive line coach at heart. He was an offensive lineman himself at North Carolina. So, no wrong answers here, but I went with Arthur Smith as the best move of the offseason. Scotty, what do you got?
What's funny, Dave, is I wrote down 10 different options. there are so many. Like, for me, underrated is getting Connor Hawkins, a new kicker, right, that we think is going to be reliable. Underrated, too, hiring a special teams coach, Robbie Disher. Like, to me, those are, like, ones that people aren't going to bring up as the best move, but I loved both of those moves. Chris Henry, of course, that was big. Arthur Smith, I agree with you on that one. I'm going to go a little off the board, and I'm going to say retaining Jeremiah Smith. And
that's
like
a good one.
It was such a foregone conclusion. The best player is going to be back, but Miami was making a significant push for Jeremiah Smith, and he's the best player in college football, and you're retaining him back for another year in basically what's college football has become free agency every single year. And so for me, bringing back Jeremiah Smith is the biggest, most important move that Ohio State football had. And I could also, you brought this up to me too, Matt Patricia, the retaining Matt Patricia, huge deal. So that would be my argument. Number one, Jeremiah Smith. Number two, Matt Patricia.
I love it, Scott, because that didn't even go in my mind, and it didn't even go through my mind. And you're right. I mean, he's being very well taken care of at Ohio State, as we know. But from what I was told, he took like at least $1 million less than what Miami was offering him. So, you know, we see it all the time. Somebody makes a lot of money, like, what's an extra $1 million? But that's easy for you to say when it's not your money. For him to take less, again, he's very well taken care of, to stay at Ohio State.
Florida has no state income tax, too.
No, the portal's closed. But, yeah, I think that's a good one. Patricia would be my number two behind Arthur Smith. But then right there would be Jeremiah Smith. But retaining Patricia, absolutely huge. Buckeyes losing 8 starters off the defensive side of the ball for the second straight year. They reloaded and then some last year. I don't think they're going to be as good defensively this year, but I think they're going to be really good. Let's go through some other ones. We'll get Cole's like thoughts on the best move of the offseason. So let's just go piecemeal. I agree with Manny Navarro that the most important recruit was Chris Henry. All right, let's go transfer portal. This is tough because they got a lot of guys that I like. I think Ohio State did a really good job of filling needs with veteran players who have proven to be good college players. These aren't like lottery tickets. These are guys you know have produced at the collegiate level, and they're veteran. It lacks star power to a certain degree compared to what they've brought in recent years, a guy like Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins. But I'm going to go with Earl Little Jr. was the best addition from the transfer portal. You could talk me into James Smith or Dominic Kelly or Jacoby Jackson or Devin McEwen, but I'll go with Earl Little Jr.
Yeah, I would agree with you. But going back to what has given Ohio State so much misery over the last decade is missing big field goal kicks.
Well, that's true. Right? I should have thrown Connor Hawkins.
And are we sure that, you know, again, are we sure that a game's not going to come down to the end when we get to the playoffs? And you need to have that confidence that your kid can make it. And, you know, so Connor Hawkins to me is a very underrated ad. Now, one thing that people forget too is there was about a week or two period where it looked like Bo Jackson's services as running back might be up for grabs,
yes.
Right? And so to me, I do believe that retaining Bo Jackson, because I think we are going to see a big jump freshman year, because not everybody realizes the injuries that he was dealing with at the end of last season. I think we're going to see a big jump from Bo Jackson's freshman year to Bo Jackson's second year. So I think that's another one of the underrated things in the offseason.
Another great call on your part. I'm going to kick it over to Cole. If you got to pick the best move, and you can name more than one, best move of the offseason for the Buckeyes.
All right. I didn't consider this because I was only thinking of addition, so I'm glad that you guys had the floor first because I was able to kind of steal some of your ideas. I would say Matt Patricia would be number one just because I know when he came here, I was so digging my heels in on the fact that he was using Ohio State as an auditioning round to go back to the NFL. That was certainly my impression, and I would still say that, I guess, because at the time that he had came to Ohio State, the NFL hiring cycle had already basically completed itself to the point where I'm like, okay, well, go figure he's coming down to the college ranks because he probably considers himself a coordinator. I don't know this, but I assume that because of his success in his career, maybe he doesn't want to take a position coaching job because maybe he just, you know, the inner ego inside of that won't allow him because of everything that he's achieved up to that point. And so when he comes down to the college ranks at Ohio State, I think, okay, he's auditioning for the NFL and he knocked it out of the park in year one as Ohio State's defensive coordinator. And so I was just assuming, oh, go figure. Matt Patricia just waiting in the wings for another NFL defensive coordinator position. We had just seen the year before Al Golden get stripped away from Notre Dame to go to the Bengals. And so I thought that the next defensive coordinator to make that step up was going to be Matt Patricia, and it didn't happen. So Matt Patricia being on this coaching staff for a second year is something I would not have anticipated. So I got to put that as the best, I guess, off-season story for Ohio State's favor.
And Ross Bjork and the donors were over there like, well, he better live up to it because we're paying him $3.75 million to be, and I think he's worth every penny. It's funny, though, guys. It wasn't that long ago. Actually, it probably was. Old school. It was early in the Urban Meyer era.
Black Sox?
Yeah, I tell you what, man. On my 16th birthday, watching the Black Sox scandal, that was crazy. No, but I was covering a press conference, and it was just Gene Smith. It was Gene Smith talking to the local media, and it was a wide-ranging conversation. I want to say it was 2012, maybe 2013. And I'll never forget Gene Smith saying, "We're not going to get into the business of paying assistant coaches $1 million a year. We're not going to get into the business of paying assistant coaches $1 million a year. Well, how about four times that much?" I mean, it's crazy how fast things have changed in a multitude of ways in college football. College football was basically the same, Scott, like for so many years, minor tweaks. And then it's just been massive tweak after massive tweak the last few, you can't even really call them tweaks, massive changes after massive changes the last few years.
I would say, though, and I'm with you guys, Patricia, top one or two moves of the offseason. What was the biggest surprise to you? Like if you, once Ohio State lost to Miami, of all the different changes that happened, I think you got to say the hiring of Arthur Smith, because that was a name that I don't think anybody would have really even considered was on the board. So that to me is the most surprising of all the moves. I was thrilled that they decided, okay, now's the time we need to actually make a hire for a special teams coach. That surprised me that they did it because they went so long without having a full-time special teams coach. But Arthur Smith's hiring, to me, is the biggest surprise of all the offseason.
I almost forgot about this. Like, as soon as the offensive coordinator job came open, 24/7 Sports wanted us to do, for Bucknuts, do a hot board for the offensive coordinator. I took the assignment. My number one candidate on there, Todd Monken.
Wow.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Was Arthur Smith even on the board?
No, I don't think
How
I had
How deep was this board?
It wasn't that deep. It wasn't like it was a hot board where I had like 12 different guys on it, but it was like, because Monken at the time, you know, he had experience as, you know, an offensive coordinator with Georgia, and then he was with the Ravens, but then Harbaugh left, and there was questions if Harbaugh was going to, like, if he was going to follow Harbaugh to New York or not. I didn't think he was going to get an NFL head coaching job, but he did. The Browns obviously hired him. I'm trying to think of some other guys who were on there, but Monken, I remember on my story, was number one on the list.
Well, I remember, so I was down in Florida when the news broke that Ohio State made the offensive coordinator hire, and the guy who I was with was a big Penn State fan, and he's like, "Guess who you guys just hired?" And at that time, I started naming off like 5-6 guys, and he's like, "Nope." And then it got to Arthur Smith, and I about fell over because that wasn't even on my radar, most people's radar, that he was available. At one point, remember, we were talking about JT Barrett even being in the conversation for offensive coordinator. So for me, the most surprising is definitely the Arthur Smith hiring.
And he checks so many boxes. I mean, it's still unbelievable to me that Ohio State's, both of their coordinators are former NFL head coaches. And I know you could say, well, he wasn't that good of an NFL head coach with the Falcons. Obviously, Patricia, not a good NFL head coach with the Lions, but look at those rosters. Who could have won with those Lions, or with those Lions rosters went? Now, Patricia did a bad job there. I think, you know, Arthur Smith did an okay job with the Falcons when you consider, like, most of his tenure there, he had, like, Desmond Ridder and, like, Marcus Mariota as his quarterbacks. Yeah, I'm with you. That was one that took me aback. And I'll hear Steeler fans say, well, oh, we didn't have that good of an offense last year.
We didn't have that good of an offense last year.
But you guys were dead last in the NFL in spending on offense. Number one in the NFL in spending on defense, 32 out of 32 in payroll on offense. So you can't be cheap and expect elite results. What you can't expect is tell the truth. That is up next, for real this time, on Roth.
Zero.
Your favorite fan shows are available as a podcast. What a concept. And don't miss exclusive podcast content like Austin and Burn. Listen on your schedule from anywhere in the world. Available wherever you get your podcasts. The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by KDHVAC. Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan. Tell the truth with Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by McDaniel GM Superstore. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
Welcome back to Rothman and Ice. 97.1 The Fan. Dave Biddle, Scotty Vegas, Cole Bartemus, Anthony and Maddie playing hooky today. But they will be back in full effect on Monday. And now it's time for some Tell the Truth. Hit it, Cole.
Yeah, I was just going through... I'm on the Wikipedia page right now for a list of SportsCenter anchors and reporters.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's actually kind of incredible going through some of the former SportsCenter anchors and just how many names I recognize. And I don't know if it's like a change in my viewing habits, But, you know, there are some people who are still on the roster. Scott Van Pelt obviously has the Late Night Sports Center, so that's his. Familiar with him. Kevin Negandhi's been there since 08, quite familiar with him. David Lloyd's been there forever. Steve Levy. So there are some people who have been there forever. But, like, I look through some of the names of the former anchors, and it's just like my childhood on repeat. And I kind of wonder, because, you know, sometimes you just assume that everybody else views the world the way that you do. Like, I wonder if the current people who are on SportsCenter, who, like, we could barely name, I wonder if kids today are growing up and, like, those guys are our, you know, Chris Bermans and whatnot.
No chance. No chance. Like, my 11-year-old has probably never even seen a SportsCenter. Now, he is a sports fan, but he had never, ever is like, hey, let's throw on SportsCenter. I mean, he's watching all these sports highlights and things on YouTube, but he is not watching SportsCenter. Now, it's funny you brought that up, Cole, because Dave and I were debating during the break. We kept talking about our favorite SportsCenter anchors and throwing it back and forth, and it is crazy. This is how crazy I was about SportsCenter. I used to like to play SportsCenter Fantasy, and this might be a little bit too much, but I would like to pretend like I was the program director, and I would match up these different SportsCenter anchors with different hosts and different times and all that stuff. It was before playing
fantasy
football.
And you and Rothen were betting on the hypothetical ratings that they would get.
But I was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if Rich Eisen and Chris Berman did a SportsCenter together? They rarely do. It was always Rich Eisen and Stuart Scott. So let's throw that matchup together. Yeah, I was a weird kid.
It's all right. You've always been very excited about them. No, you're not. You get excited about things. I like that about you. You have a lot of passion. And you're good at what you do, Scott.
The industry is different. The popularity is different. ESPN is different. But I don't want to be this guy who now is like a 27-year-old where I'm like I'm in between being a child and a parent. And so it's like I don't want to be the person who just like, oh, you know, these kids nowadays, cause I don't know. I'm not a parent, but I do wonder what the viewership is and what the, cuz like, man, me and my friends, I remember when we were kids, like we knew it was time for bed at sleepovers when we would see the same SportsCenter air for the third time in a row.
Yep.
We'd see we would know which highlights were coming next because we had already picked up on the pattern of the games. And it's like, yeah, dude, there's nothing left to do. Like, let's just call it a night.
There's just too much to do now. Maybe not too much. There's so much more to do. Like when I was in college, the internet existed, but it was in like its infant stages. So seeing something like SportsCenter, yeah, we would just watch it over and over and over and over again. Now, if you want to see highlights, man, you can just get online. You can do, you know, get on social media and get everything you need.
You get the highlight that you want immediately on your phone. Like that's the difference. Like SportsCenter, we'd actually have to wait till the next SportsCenter was on before we'd see it. But now you see it immediately.
Simpler times. Not SportsCenter anchors, but who were your favorite late night talk show hosts?
Favorite late night talk show hosts? I would go with David Letterman. Was the first one that came to mind. Yeah, I always liked David Letterman. I'm trying to think who else. That's definitely the top of my list. What about you?
Yeah, I was never a huge late night. I occasionally would watch Leno a little bit. Not a huge late night host guy. Honestly, I was watching sports. I wasn't watching that.
I was the same thing.
You can't bet on late night talk shows.
Right,
Letterman,
right.
Letterman was my exception. I used to like watching Letterman, but like... yeah, I mean, like, Conan O'Brien, if he had Norm Macdonald on, that would be classic. Now, I never watched it at the time, but watching these old clips of Norm Macdonald when he was on Conan O'Brien, hilarious.
If you were a college football recruit, what are three schools you would want to spend an official visit on?
Ooh, I like that. All right, three schools. All right, I'm going to, let's see here. I'm going to L.A., probably USC. Yep. Even though I kind of like their new coach at UCLA, Chesney, not just because he's going to a Big Ten school straight from James Madison. here's the thing: you got to have UCLA in the playoffs
UCLA,
this year.
But we're in LA.
That 2024 Big Ten Media Days had everything. It had Deshaun Foster saying that. It had Cignetti saying, "Google me. All I do is win," and all these reporters around me are cackling. And who does this guy think he is? And it's like, yeah, give him a little bit. Okay, now I'm just stalling now.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. I wrote down USC, Miami, and LSU.
Ooh, okay. I'm going.
That'd have been
USC,
great in the early 2000s.
I'm going USC, Miami, and.
Oh, wait. Why don't I go out to Hawaii? Let me.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, nailed it.
Oh, and let's start. We've got to start one on the in the Atlantic Ocean too. We got to have the University of Bermuda. They're going to start I'm going to
University
on that.
Nassau,
Hawaii,
Miami,
USC, and Miami.
Yes.
There you go. Texas would be my others receiving votes.
That's a pretty good list right there. But I had another one. It's National Movie Night tonight. I already asked the two guys yesterday, but if you had to celebrate by watching a movie tonight, what would you watch?
Pulp Fiction. It's my favorite movie.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. My list of favorite movies, Rothman thinks this is funny, because I was saying two of my favorite movies are Pulp Fiction. That's my favorite is Pulp Fiction. Like, you could make the argument that Major League's number two, and Rothman's like, those movies are nothing alike. I didn't say they were alike.
They're just
my top two favorite. But I could be talked into Shawshank. There's a lot out there. By the way, Shawshank in 94, Forrest Gump came out, and then a couple months later, Pulp came out, and then a couple months after that, Shawshank came out. Now we're lucky if we get a good movie every 3 years, let alone three classics within like 4 months.
So it's crazy.
A solid run.
And again, I'm weird. We already established that this segment. But I don't generally like rewatching movies I've already seen. As weird as that is, like once I've seen it.
Isaiah was just telling me about that.
Yeah.
He's the same way.
Yeah. Like, well, I've seen it. It's
done.
Have
to
move on.
When you finally watch Godfather, you're going to have to watch it again. Because I like Godfather and Godfather 2 more. Those would be on my list too, Cole. Godfather 1 and 2. I think 3 is actually underrated. It's nowhere near as good as 1 and 2. It kind of gets a bad rap. But those are the type of movies you have to watch a few times to really get it.
See, some of my favorite movies, you definitely don't need to rewatch. Like, Con Air and The Rock and all these stupid movies.
What generally, about Anchorman?
Anchorman's
up there for me. Okay, sure. What about, let's talk about some of our favorite comedies. Definitely The Hangover.
The Rock.
Losers always whine
yes.
about their
best. Oh my gosh. Greatest line. Greatest line. One of my favorites.
What's happened to comedies, man?
Winners Go Home.
We used to have so many good comedies. I mean, thinking back to the 80s, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
And The Prom Queen.
Classic. All right, we have a watch party tonight. Team USA against Paraguay. 9 o'clock tonight at Hollywood Casino. Come out for our watch party. You can win free prizes.
Can't wait.
Again, free prizes. You don't have to do anything. Just come up. Talk to Scotty and I. We're going to have some contests. What can the good people win?
Oh, all kinds of things. Gift cards. We got fan gear, shirts, all that stuff. Join us 9 o'clock at the casino tonight.
Yeah, come on out to Hollywood Casino. We're going to have a great time. That is our show for today. Thank you very much for joining us. For Scotty Vegas and Cole Bartimus, I am Dave Biddle. Up next is Common Man and Timmy, which will feature Go to Jail Friday, as well as Music Appreciation Friday, and much more. This has been Rothman and Ice on The Fan.
We test marketed naming the show A Guy and His Butlers.
Oh, that is very touching.
But we thought Bishop and Friends had a better ring to it.
Weekday mornings at 9.